We would like to welcome you to the February 14th St. Valentine meeting of the Savannah Historic District Board of Review. The purpose of this board is to promote the educational, cultural, and economic general welfare of the city of Savannah. This board is appointed by City Council and is not affiliated with any for-profit and nonprofit organization. Preservation standards, visual compatibility factors, and design standards established in the City of Savannah zoning ordinance are the basis for evaluating the compatibility of changes in new development. The board cannot consider criteria not specifically identified within the ordinance. Items such as landscaping, parking availability, traffic, noise, and impact on property values are not within the board's purview and cannot be a factor in the issuance or denial of a COA. Similarly, personal preferences will not be the basis for any decision. At this time, please mute your cell phones so we can clearly hear everyone and have a clear record. Members of the board receive packages containing applications in the week before the meeting and individually visit the sites of the projects. If a project is not properly posted, it is removed from the agenda and rescheduled. Were there any projects that were not posted this month? Hearing none, we will move on to the consent agenda. These agenda items have been found by the preservation officer to be in accordance with the preservation standards, visual compatibility factors, and design standards, and have apparent consensus with no known objections from the public. Items on this month's consent agenda. Number one, petition of Hansen Architects, file number 23-006366 COA 124 West Taylor Street, new construction, small, part one and two. Number two, petition of Felder and Associates, file number 24-000213-COA 201 East River Street, roof and stucco repair and mechanical equipment. Item number three, petition of Steve Lieberman, file number 23-006237COA 521 York Street, a fence. Item number four, petition of Sotil and Sotil, file number 23-005882-COA 135 Lincoln Street, in addition. Item number five, petition of AD Collaborative, file number 23-00-6354-COA 144 Drayton Street, rehabilitation and alteration. Item number six, petition of Array Design, Shauna Cusera, file number 24-000-199-COA 548 Nickel Street, addition and alterations. And item number seven, petition of Andrew Lynch, file number 24-000-215-COA 230 Bull Street, alterations. Is there any member of the public or any board member who wishes to remove an item from the consent agenda to the regular agenda?
Yes, I would like to move items four, five, and six to the regular agenda.
Is there a second?
I second. Becker.
Okay, there's a motion on the floor to move items four, five, and six to the consent agenda. Mr. Becker, how do you vote?
Aye.
Mr. Higgins?
Aye.
Mr. Houle?
Aye.
Ms. Rowan?
No.
Mr. Thompson? Okay, with that, the motion carries and items are moved to the regular agenda. Is there a motion for approval of the regular agenda?
Houle, yes, so moved.
Is there a second?
Higgins, second.
All right. Pamela, Mr. Becker.
Aye.
Higgins.
Aye.
Cool.
Aye.
Rowan.
Aye.
Thompson.
Aye.
All right. A motion was made. Oops, remind me who made my motion. Sorry, y'all, this is my first meeting. By Stan and seconded by Becker and unanimously approved. The minutes from the previous meeting are attached to the agenda. Is there a motion for approval of the previous meeting minutes?
So moved.
Rowan, second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
The motion to approve the minutes has been approved. Are there any items that are requested to be removed from the final agenda?
No.
Hearing none, we will move. Y'all bear with me. Have there been any items that request an extension?
There are two items on the continued agenda. One Bull Street for some illuminated signs. This is a larger issue that, again, as we were discussing during the pre-meeting, we're having some discussions with the city of Savannah about the treatment of illuminated signs in the downtown historic district that are set behind storefront windows and how they should be handled, both in terms of whether there should be a standard for your jurisdiction in terms of how far they are set back from those windows and the size of those windows. So Caitlin's been doing a great job of taking the lead on that. And then the second one is one that I think you all are aware of, 409 West Taylor Street. Kelly's been doing a wonderful job with that. That is proposed demolition of what is currently classified as a non-contributing building at 409 West Taylor and new construction. That will likely be before you in March. The delay in that relates to the proposed parking that was going to be on a lot adjacent to it. The city of Savannah was not going to be in support of the parking situation. And so the applicant is looking at potentially changing the design of the whole project to deal with the parking.
Thank you. These applications have been requested to be continued to the following meeting. Is there a motion to continue these items?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Mr. Becker, how do you vote?
Aye.
Mr. Higgins?
Aye.
Mr. Houle?
Aye.
Ms. Rowan?
Aye.
Mr. Thompson?
Aye.
The motion to approve the continued agenda has been approved and has passed. And we have no request for extension, so we will move on to the regular agenda. Staff will present the application with a recommendation. The petitioner will then have the opportunity to respond with the recommendations. We ask that the petitioner limit their presentation to 10 minutes or less and only address the items identified as inconsistent with the ordinance or questions raised by the board. The public will then have the opportunity to comment, after which the petitioner may respond to the public comments. The board will then go into board discussion, at which point no further testimony is received unless specifically requested of and granted by the chairman. We will structure board discussion by going around to each board member two times for comment. You do not have to provide comments if you do not have any. If you are joining us virtually for the first time, locate your control panel. Public that wishes to submit a comment, use the raise your hand feature. I will be notified and will call on you by name. You will submit your name for the record and then you may comment. Please keep your comments to 3 minutes or less. First item on the regular agenda is item number 11, petition of J. Elder Studio.
Did you want to do the items first that you pulled off the consent agenda? It's your call.
First or last? Do them first. Yep. Let's do them first. Okay. So we would start with?
It should be number 4, 135 Lincoln Street, I believe.
Correct.
So I'm going to let Caitlin present to you all.
We had a bit of a technical difficulty earlier. Normally we have everything pulled up and ready to go. So just appreciate y'all's patience while we do these as they come. All right. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the board. This is Caitlin Chamberlain presenting the petition for 135 Lincoln Street. The applicant is proposing to install a rear two-story addition for the property located at 135 Lincoln Street. The project includes the demolition of a non-historic infill wall where a recessed porch has been historically. The project also includes removal of a non-historic deck and stoop at the ground level, which is not visible from a public right-of-way, and because of that, it is not subject to the review. The project area is at the rear of the property and is most visible from York Street. But due to a wall and the addition at 133 Lincoln Street, the view of this addition would only be partially visible from the public right-of-way on East York Street, as well as from the public right-of-way not standing on the private parking lot on East York Lane. This petition was first heard at the December 13th, 2023 HDBR meeting. The board had some concerns and opted to continue it to the January 10th meeting to provide the applicant with time to address the conditions. Due to staffing, the project was continued again to today's meeting. So the four conditions were: one, provide drawings that include both 133 and 135 Lincoln Street additions for visual compatibility verification. So here, I'll show you. The side-by-side detail that has now since been included. Two was report back on the meeting with the neighbor to address water concerns, maintenance concerns, and accessibility. So that results of that meeting was sent via email for our records. So this was with the neighbors, the petitioners, the contractors, and then the owners of 135 Lincoln. They agreed to remove the existing shared downspout straddling the 133-135 property boundary and reinstall it to a place at the south end of the 135 proposed addition and route runoff south and east to the street. To marry the roof lines of the 135 new addition with the 133 existing addition and connect the 133 addition gutter to the 135 addition, routing runoff to the revised shared downspout and gutter system. That was something that all parties agreed to. To clarify the conditions of replacement or repair of the historic window on the second story, this information was provided. It will be a Colby Heritage series operational window here. This 2/2 style reflects what is seen throughout the rest of not only 135, but 133 and the neighboring building. There's a non-original 6/6 window in that place now. And then the fourth condition was to address material concerns with the plywood that is currently being proposed. Since the December meeting, the applicant has addressed the conditions with the plywood. Staff was concerned that this was going to be something that was on the prohibited materials list, like the plywood seen in T111 siding, but the applicant provided information in great detail about the qualities of marine grade plywood, which satisfy that requirement. So due to the fact that the applicant has met the conditions, staff does recommend to approve the request. I will also just go through before we get to that point, just to go through the newer submittal packet with, as we noticed, the photos of either partial view of the site plan, the existing elevations, proposed elevation here. East York Street elevations, and then there's the existing plans. And then proposed, this is running kind of slow, sorry. And just more information about colors and materials. So with that, the staff recommends approval of the request to construct a rear addition on the property located at 135 Lincoln Street as requested, because the work is otherwise visually compatible and meets the standards. Thank you. I'll be happy to take your questions.
Thank you, Caitlin. Are there any questions for staff?
I have two questions, Caitlin. Number one, could you go to the Sanborn maps? I just want to confirm that the original design of the two buildings had the cabinets and the recessed area between them.
So they start to show up on, I think this is 1888 map. Oh, okay, it says by 1916 it can be observed and remains the case through the 1973.
So if I'm looking at this correctly, the dotted line reflects the recessed area originally?
Mm-hmm.
And were the second projects or the first projects that infilled those, were those approved by the city?
I believe that might have been done quite some time ago, because I was reading on the survey report card that was done in the 90s. It made note, there was somewhere where it made note that vertical board siding was there. And there was like double sliding glass doors on them, on either of them. So it seems like they've been changed a few times over the years, like quite some time ago.
But you're not aware if they've been approved? If the changes?
I've not seen anything about it. So.
Caitlin, can you go back to the photograph that shows 133, 135, and then the ones across the? Yes. Does staff have any challenges about visual compatibility with all the ornamentation of the proposed addition and the 16-panel window that they want to use, especially now that they're replacing the, what is it, a 4/4 window or whatever it is with the 2/2?
I think for the purposes of the review, we were looking at kind of the existing, still kind of within the same plane. Of course, they're not going to be identical. Neither of these is historic. But it didn't seem to be glaringly not compatible. If the board feels differently, there's something we can also discuss further with the applicant.
So staff has no feelings that it's about the visual compatibility?
No.
Are there any additional questions for staff? Thank you, Caitlin.
Thanks.
Would the petitioner please come forward and state your name for the record?
Good afternoon. My name is Christine Sotil. I'm an architect, an urbanist, and a historic preservationist. I'm pleased to present the project to you. Actually, I want to thank staff for their thoughtful presentation and their staff report, which I think details very specifically how this project conforms to the letter of the ordinance that we have on record. So I don't have much to add to the staff's presentation. It's one of the most thorough ones I've seen. I regret I wasn't here in December to be able to present to the group, but appreciated the opportunity to continue some of the coordination that needed to happen. We did meet with on those four items. We did meet with the neighbors to address concerns about removing gutters that would be in a location that wouldn't really be beneficial to either of the two homes, which we had planned to do, but we of course have done that now, and you have that letter of support. We did provide the rear elevations of 133 as asked for. We in addition provided rear elevations to the adjacent homes at 139 and 141 Lincoln Street. I do want to point out these are all interior elevations, interior to a block. And if you go back to those Sanborn maps, you'll see this is one of those situations where a tithing block has been subdivided to front a north-south street. And in so doing, it actually renders an unusual condition in this block where you actually have interior rear-facing facades. So it was actually very difficult to provide all those rear elevations. We had to climb over people's walls to do it. And I do want to point that out when you think about visual compatibility standards, that they are really focused on the front facades of buildings. So we can talk about that in greater detail, but the condition about repairing historic windows was one, and the replacement of the non-historic window was one we addressed, and then the material concerns. So all of those items have been addressed. I just want to make a quick point on a few things here that I think are really important for us to be thinking about with this project, this very small project. This is an organic. This is a very organic project, and this is very Savannah. This is the way Savannah grows. And that's, I think, a big part of Savannah's growth and evolution over time. Its resilience is its ability to grow. And the natural order of the urban structure with row houses, maybe the most famous row house of all time in Savannah is Gordon Row, where you have, in fact, I'm not sure a building like this would be approved today. It'd be hard to because it's so monotonous. But it's become so beautiful over time as all the individual owners one by one make decisions about their private property. And some paint, some renew the stucco, some add balconies. But there's still a great deal of conformance. So as we go through time, we see the facades of these buildings become, in a sense, personal to their owners, but at the same time, still very much part of their original intention. This is, of course, 1853. But these buildings are living, and they're living. I really want to underscore that these are living buildings, just like we are all living people in this room today. And there is an organic quality to that. So if we go to the other side of Gordon Row, the side that no one really sees very often, and you look at the back of these buildings, you'll see one of the most interesting tapestries of real life playing out on the rear facades of those buildings. And of course, you don't have to go to Gordon Row to see this. You can see this everywhere. In fact, you can see this next door. And that's Savannah, you know, regularity at the street and diversity at the rear of properties. So this is my favorite example of it, but it's really about fronts and backs. And I think there's been a bit of confusion, in this project. So when we talk about fronts and backs, we can admire the decorum of the street front, and we can also admire the diversity of the private courtyards and all the additive decisions that have been made over time. This is an old, old tradition. We've been doing this actually, I think, since the very beginning of this city. And you can see it everywhere. And just a few photos just to kind of remind us of how we do this. You add on to a building, you don't compromise the upper roof line. The addition is differentiated from the original, sometimes maybe even a bit more decorative. To Mr. Becker, Mr. Higgins' point, you know, here's a fine addition with pilasters and columns and siding infill. No question that it's not original to the structure, but it's been infilled. But it's also a very pleasant and harmonious way to do it. Some are more humble, but you add on and then you add on again. We see this everywhere. You know, another addition defined by pilasters. They're all over the city. Some maybe not so great architecturally, not to point fingers, but you know, this is one of those, you just keep going, and this is real life. So they're all over, and we know this. And there's some that are really old. Like this is an addition from the 90s, where they actually went ahead and added brackets under the, you can see this bay window is pushed out, and they went ahead and added the flavor of the day, which was a more ornate bracketed solution to that particular bay window addition. So we see this all the time. In fact, we have an ordinance about it. It's the one that we're all, you know, here and we all abide to. And if you call out just 7, 8, 10, which is the section that deals with additions, this very section, it's really hard to say that there is any other way to do this and that there's anything about this that does not comply with our ordinance. Additions shall not be on the primary facade of the resource. They shall be located to the rear. Check. Additions shall be subordinate in height and mass to the resource. Check. It is below the roofline of the original structure. Additions shall not obscure or damage any character-defining features. Check. Again, in fact, in this case, we are not only not removing any historic material, we're not even covering up any historic material because it's already been enclosed for many years. Additions to roofs shall not be visible from the front elevation. There is no human being that could ever see this addition from the front elevation unless we went up, which maybe is the other option, but we obviously aren't doing that. An addition shall be sited so that it's clearly an appendage and distinguishable from the contributing building. And again, I would say check that it's clearly an appendage, it's clearly distinguishable from the contributing building. And it's actually also distinguishable from its neighboring addition, which was done at a different time in the 1990s, 30 years ago. So we're not repeating any, you know, there's no false sense of history here. You can read the tapestry of different owners. Although there is compatibility with that, I do want to talk about that. Alignments of headers, alignments of sills, alignment roof lines, alignment, in fact, of gutters. And then additions shall be reversible with minimal damage to the contributing building. And that is, of course, true here as well. Every single stick that involved in making this addition can be removed. Not one single brick of the original building is being damaged or removed. And I do also want to say from a property rights point of view, I think we have to be very careful when we start talking about things like this, because we have an ordinance that allows 75% lot coverage. So if we follow that thinking, if we just follow the rules, we actually would be allowed an addition that is twice the size of the addition that's been proposed, twice the size. We're adding 5 feet on the back of the building over an old patio, and we're aligning it with our neighboring addition, so there's compatibility there. From a legal point of view, that addition really could be 10 feet deep. It's not. But we have to be careful about that, because this is a property right enjoyed by all property owners in the historic district. So I do want to say this is not, in no way is it maximizing the use of the property, but we believe it's the appropriate use of the property. As mentioned, we did coordinate with the neighboring property, and I think the staff touched on that. They strongly recommend that you approve the application so we may achieve the project completion goals. And then the views to the property really from the public street, in fact, place 133 Lincoln Street, as you can see in the foreground of your view. That is really the primary right-of-way view, and you're actually getting kind of a stolen view through the middle of the block, but that's the view that we need to keep in mind. And with the neighboring property, I'll say what we've done is we've aligned the addition precisely with their roof line so we can actually continue the gutter and convey that water away from both of the private courtyards. So a very, we think, very satisfactory solution. And then the windows we touched on, but I don't know if we have to go further into that. I'll leave it at that to not take more of your time. I appreciate very much your consideration of this petition and respectfully ask for your agreement with the staff recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sotile. Are there any questions for the petitioner?
Yeah. First of all, I want to commend you on working with the neighbors and the overall scale and design of this project. I guess my question is, can you tell me a little bit more about your decision to use the 16-panel window and also the decorative elements that contrast very strongly with the neighboring addition?
I can go to the facade. So the thinking was, first of all, to not create a false sense of history. The addition to the neighboring property was added on in the 1990s, so approximately a generation ago. So this is where we are today. However, being mindful of it, matching its extension from the building, matching its roof line, and then also matching, if you'll see the headers and sills of the upper windows are in alignment. So we took all those things to heart. In terms of the windows themselves, we felt it was appropriate for a modern addition to have a slightly different take on glazing, one that is proportional to the form language and the ratio of the glazing in the 2/2 windows. It's the same. It's in fact the same 5/3 proportion, but reduced to a smaller pane size to give it a little more delicacy. And we felt like it was sort of a subtle way. And we often see modern additions should reflect the time in which they're built. So there's sort of a nod to being a bit more of a contemporary addition. It is a wood-based addition, so all the details, I think you may be referring to maybe the pilasters feeling a bit more decorative. All of that is really very much in the plane of the building, so it's a very subtle effect when it's done. It's just really shadow lines because everything's constructed of wood. You might say, in fact, the inspiration for that particular treatment was one born out of the addition on Lafayette Square that I showed a photograph of. We felt like that was a great inspiration point for this one. You can see that sort of dark infill and the pilasters. Also gives it a sense of, as this does, that you know that it's a space that you know that has a sense of airiness to it. So design is, it's hard to quantify exactly, but those were our decisions to try to make it sort of a bit of a special element that was of its time. The addition at 133 is, you know, was done in the 1990s. And so that was our thought process.
Are there any additional questions for our petitioner? Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there a member of the public that would like to comment? We ask that you please come forward and state your name for the record.
Hello, Liesl Kotheimer, 133 Lincoln, so the neighbor. Just wanted to say a few things. One, that they have been wonderful to work with, dealing with the drainage and the roof line and compatibility between the two structures, which are attached but completely privately owned. Regarding the windows, with my knowledge of historic preservation, I think it's important to have proportionately compatible aligned windows. That said, it is a new addition of a different era. And so the divided lights, I think, are a good reflection of the timeline of the years in which have passed between the 133 addition and the 135. Addition. That said, we also have on 133 a north-facing patio door with divided lights, so it's not really incompatible with that either. Is there anything else? We love it. Generally, you know, the property, you know, has been neglected. It's been a rental for quite a long time. And so to have owner occupiers making these really nice improvements, doing everything right, we really encourage that and we're really happy about it.
Thank you. Would the petitioner like to respond? Oh, Mr. Jones.
Good afternoon. Thank you. First, I'd like to clear up what I perceive as some fallacies in the prior testimony by the architect. Lot coverage.
Sorry, Mr. Jones. Can you state your name?
My name is Andrew Jones, and I'm chair of the Oglethorpe Plan Coalition. Thank you very much. I'd like to clear up what certainly I perceive as some of the fallacies in the testimony earlier. Lot coverage does not override historic preservation standards. In addition, you were supposed to decide on the basis of three things: Department of Interior standards, the visual compatibility, and 7.810 design standards. The architect went through 7.810, but you still have two other prongs that you have to be satisfied with in order to grant a COA. In terms of precedent, you heard saw many precedents. That is not relevant in the ordinance. All those existing buildings are grandfathered. There is nothing under the tests that you apply that cites precedent. It simply is not there. That is not your authority. The Gordon Row that he showed, those rear facades are not visible from the lane because the view is blocked by carriage houses. And furthermore, all the criteria apply to rear facades, and these facades specifically are visible from the lane, and the lane is defined as a street type. So that's first to clear up all the misinformation in that prior testimony. You have two remaining prongs under the Department of Interior standards and the visual compatibility tests, and this just simply does not meet them in our view. Under the DOI standards, you need to protect the form of the buildings, and there's greater emphasis that is given to rows of buildings. You're not supposed to allow a row of buildings to be altered into a set of completely different buildings, especially here where it's visible from the lane, which is a street, and you also need to address the visual compatibility criteria as it is written. Now, this is a really important issue. It's a difficult issue. I understand that. You should spend a lot of time thinking about this because it affects 18 contributing buildings in the area. The inset porches are a character-defining trait. You see them everywhere here, and if you approve this, you're creating a precedent that's going to affect these 18 other buildings. All of these views are visible from the street or the lane, and you're going to be significantly changing the historic character of this wonderful section of the downtown. The standards talk about form, and they talk about rows of buildings. If you allow this second building now to be altered because of the first, then the third changes and the fourth changes, and you have altered the row as it is perceived.
Mr. Jones, please try to wrap up your comments.
And the last one is visual compatibility. I may not have the right numbers on these buildings, but what was not in the staff report is a section of visual compatibility that you do need to look at, which is the rhythm of entrances and or port projections. And of course, what you've got here is the opposite of the port recession. And this is a series of flat buildings with recessed porch structures. So you need to determine whether this porch formation on the new building, this extension, is compatible with the inset porches on, I guess it's 139 and 141. So you need to apply the visually related standard to the buildings that are within view of the subject property. That is the definition in the ordinance. You can't just look at one building. You've got to look at the ones that it's visually related to. And as you can see, the view from the lane, you actually can't even see much of 133. It's really the other two buildings. And we believe that this is not visually compatible. And we're very concerned about the alteration of the of this row. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Is there another member of the public?
Hello, hello. Ellie Isaacs, Director of Preservation at Historic Savannah Foundation. Our ARC is in full support of this project as it was presented to you today. This addition is easily reversible. As Mr. Sotil stated, it doesn't affect a single original masonry brick. And preserves the original form of the original structure, which actually does meet the preservation standards that Mr. Jones just mentioned. Not allowing the owners to put a reversible, compatible addition on the rear of their building, while those adjacent to them have been allowed to do the same thing, we believe is very unjust. And that's all I have.
Thank you. Is there another member of the public that would like to comment? Would the petitioner like to respond to public comment? And just for the record, please restate your name.
Sure. Christian Sotil. Appreciate the support of the neighbors and the detailed work, and also the review by the Historic Savannah Foundation and their Architecture Review Committee.
I don't really know what to say entirely to Mr. Jones's presentation. I think there's a lot of editing to this. In fact, even the photograph that's on screen was carefully shown to edit out the building that's adjacent, the neighboring building that you all asked us to draw into the elevation that is seen in all other photos. Of course, he noted that there are errors in the addresses that he identified here. But really, I think we have to come back to the ordinance, as we talked about before. We refer to 7.10, which specifically focuses on additions, but I think it's fine to look at 7.8.9, visual compatibility. Absolutely. In fact, read it all is what I'd suggest you do, and look at the words that appear in that ordinance. One thing I think you will not find if you look through our ordinance is you will not find the word cabinet. You will not find that word. And there's a lot of talk about cabinets here today. We're supposed to be talking about the ordinance. What you will find are words like front and back. And the word front shows up a lot. In fact, just reviewing 7.8.9, if you look at it, you will see that the very first standard that deals with proportion of front facade. Rhythm of solids to voids in front facades. Rhythm of structures on streets. This is a facade that doesn't front a street or a lane. It fronts an interior property line. Rhythm of entrances and porch projections related to the front. So that's clear. It also, then we move into additions, which we talked about. And of course, I think the Secretary of Interior standards certainly are worth reading in detail as well. And I think, again, they support this as a compatible addition. The calls, in fact, the Secretary of Standards do identify that most properties change over time and that new additions shall not destroy historic materials and shall be differentiated from the old and shall be compatible. So anyway, all that to say, we can all read the ordinance all day. I don't want to take more of your time. Really do appreciate your review of the matter, and happy to answer any other questions you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Sotil. Mr. Jones, you were allotted your time. Mr. Sotil, are you finished with your comments and response? Thank you so much. At this time, we will now enter into board discussion. No further comment will be accepted. Mr. Thompson, I'll start with you.
I'm supportive of staff recommendation in their report.
Ms. Rowan?
I'd like to commend the petitioner for working with staff and the neighbors on this project, and I think it's a beautiful design.
I think the applicant's done a good job putting this together. I did want to bring it into the regular agenda, but I'm glad we did because we had a good discussion about it.
Mr. Higgins.
I would like to echo the point that was just made. I think this is a case that clearly shows where dialogue can very much assist in understanding the petitioner's reasons for doing things, and to show compatibility and to allay any I was not convinced of its visual compatibility, but with some of the points Mr. Sotil made, I have allayed my objections.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins. Mr. Becker?
Yes. Let me make a couple comments. Article 7.10, I think L, the Downtown Overlay District, the design criteria has various criteria outlined for approving the additions for contributing structures. Mr. Sotil went through these things, and I also said I think that the staff did an excellent job of addressing the numerous design criteria that they went through. However, my concern still lies with criteria 3 of that article, which prohibits additions from obscuring or damaging character-defining features of contributing resources. In this instance, the cabinet-styled rear architecture creates a distinctive feature. It forms recessed porches for two structures. This architectural design is evident in several examples throughout the Downtown Historic District and supported by the Sanborn maps indicating the original presence. Staff showed you those earlier today. However, the previously approved enclosed rear additions have compromised this architectural design feature, contradicting the overlay's criteria. While the project justifies the approval by claiming that there's no historical materials affecting the visual compatibility with the adjacent properties, these arguments disregard the criteria for preserving these architectural features that the cabinet feature originally had. As stated before, the staff did a great job in reviewing these materials requirements. However, such considerations should not overshadow the preservation of the architectural integrity that the properties once had, and that this project amplifies the problem by enclosing them. We've had several recent incidents of reversingly previously approved projects back to the historical designation. This underscores the importance that we need to adhere to all the criteria reflecting the projects, including projects that obscure the original designs or architectural designs. I think this project fails to address that requirement, and therefore I cancel.
Thank you, Mr. Becker. I'll go around one more time, Mr. Thompson.
Well, I do think that dialogue really improves the opportunity to make improvements, and always have felt that. That's why we ask them to meet with the neighbors, but I'm still in the same place in terms of being satisfied with the staff recommendation.
Ms. Rowan?
I agree with staff's recommendation to approve it.
Mr. Houle?
I agree with the staff's recommendations.
Mr. Higgins?
I totally agree with Mr. Becker's points. The only difference in my view is because it was already obscured, and what's being done is reversible, I have less of an objection to it. Had the cabinet still been there and not obscured, I think it would be a totally different ballgame. But up and down this row, they're all enclosed, and this is reversible. So I think we walk a fine line. I think you make some very good points, and I very much commend that. I'll end it there.
Mr. Becker?
No further comments.
At this time, I will now entertain a motion.
Rowan? I move that Savannah Downtown Historic Review Board approve the petition of Satil Satil 23005882COA 135 Lincoln Street as requested because the petition is compliant with the visual compatibility criteria and design standards as set forth in the City of Savannah Zoning Ordinance.
Thompson, second.
Okay, we have a motion on the floor to approve file number 5882. Mr. Thompson, how do you vote?
Aye.
Ms. Rowan?
Aye.
Mr. Houle?
Aye.
Mr. Higgins?
Aye.
Mr. Becker?
Nay.
The vote is 4-1, so it carries and passes. Moving on to the next item on our agenda, petition of AD Collaborative, file number 23-006354, COA 144 Drayton Street.
Good afternoon. Thank you. I think it's all right with you all. I always like starting with just Google Street View. I think we're all familiar with this building. The applicant was here last month. His project architect was not here. But this is a building just a couple blocks from here on the corner of Drayton and Oglethorpe that was constructed about 1973. It's currently listed as a non-contributing resource in the Downtown Historic District. As Mr. Higgins noted during the pre-meeting, it does raise some questions about the need for our office and the City of Savannah to look at buildings of a more recent vintage and whether the period of significance should be changed to capture buildings such as this. That's a broader topic. What we're here to address today, and we appreciate you all taking the time to talk with us. Pull up my staff report. Following the meeting on January 10th, you all asked that this application be continued. And you asked the applicant to go back and look at the proposed alterations in their entirety, with the goal of preserving more of the original 1973 exterior architectural features of this building. I met with the project architect and the owner here at the MPC. They understood what you all were saying. And I'm not going to go through again all of the history of the building. But what I would like to do is to, that's the middle packet. So again, on this cover page, this is the Drayton Street elevation. There are three major changes that are being proposed from what you all saw before. Let's zoom in here. This is actually this cornice or frieze detail at the top of the building. I think I mentioned the last time, I think everybody thought it was metal. It's actually wood. And we think does date to when the building was done in 1973. We had some concerns, and I think you all did too. They were proposing to remove this and apply a stucco-type material. They have revised that. They are going to leave this in place and restore it with wood. They're just going to paint it. So we feel that is responsive to what you all had said at last month's meeting. In addition, the canopy that you see here, they were originally proposing a different treatment. We had noted last month that originally this canopy had a similar treatment to the frieze or the cornice detail and was wrapped in a similar design and materiality. The applicant got your message. They went back and looked at some options. And so what they were proposing, and I'll go into it when I switch sheets here, is to have this clad in metal, but it will match the appearance and the profiles of the frieze and the cornice. So again, we thought that was responsive to what you all had said, restoring it again to that 1973 look. The other issue that came up, you all may recall, and I'm going to go and show you on the drawings in a second, was they were proposing to change this entrance with a new ADA ramp. We didn't have any concerns about the ADA ramp, and I don't believe you all did it as well. But they were proposing the fenestration pattern for the entrance was a little, this isn't a technical term, bit wonky, and lost the symmetry of the building. And we had some concerns about that. You all articulated concerns about that. So they've come back with a new entrance that is symmetrical here. So there are three changes on the Drayton Street elevation. And then on Oglethorpe, and we'll go down. You'll see here in the upper left-hand corner, the Oglethorpe Street entrance is actually recessed quite a bit, as I'm sure you're all aware. It's currently boarded up due to some security issues, as I understand they were having. But there's actually a staircase that provides access to the second floor. It's exposed to the elements, exposed to the street. What they're proposing, again, as they did the last time, is a storefront, a new glass storefront here that would be set back to meet the standards. And they were proposing the removal of that staircase. Again, the frieze detail, the cornice detail would be restored and preserved. Go through their packet here. This is what I was talking about. I know this was a concern to some members, Mr. Higgins. This is that staircase that I was talking about that fronts onto Oglethorpe that is proposed to be demolished. The alley elevation is just really some cleanup work. This is the south elevation fronting on Oglethorpe, the demolition of that stair. Again, as I was just describing to you, they're proposing to demo the existing entrance on Drayton as well. Let's go down. So on Oglethorpe, there will be a new storefront installed as before. And then on Drayton Street, this is where the changes have come in that I just went through. The retention and restoration of the existing frieze cornice detail, the cladding of the metal canopy with a new detail. It would match what was there historically. The only difference is it's not going to be wood. It's going to be made out of metal. And then having this be a symmetrical entrance, as I noted in your previous review, you may recall there were two doors here and then there was kind of an awkward door here. And although technically this elevation is not symmetrical in its entirety, there is a symmetry to it. So with all of that, staff is recommending approval for the request for alterations to the property located at 144 Drayton Street because the work is visually compatible and meets the standards. And I'm here to answer any questions you have.
Thank you, Jonathan. Are there any questions for staff?
I have a couple. Could you bring up the Google Street view of the Drayton Street facade and zoom in just a little bit? Okay. Focus on, did the applicant provide any reason that they needed to replace this entrance? Because those doors reflect the canopy that reflect the frieze. So it seems that these three elements are so closely tied together. And I may be missing something, but I don't see that they're gaining anything by swapping this out.
They did not articulate to me, if I'm recalling correctly. I think it was more they want to give the building a freshening up, however you want to phrase that. My understanding is this existing storefront system, what they've told me, is not in great shape. The doors are not in great shape. They wanted more energy efficient. But beyond that.
I mean, I would love to have thermal pane windows in my house. Yeah. But we can't do that.
Right.
Because the current entrance, the arch reflects the canopy, the material. They're just all so closely tied together. When the canopy was altered, was there a COA?
No. As I understand it, what the owner explained to me was, as you can see in this image, it was wood, and parts of it had started falling off onto the property, and it was damaged during a couple of storms, he explained to me. And so the rest of it, it hadn't fallen off, was just removed as a public safety. I think he may have said somebody from the city had told him he needed to deal with it.
So it was dealt with without a COA?
Correct. I couldn't find any approval for its removal.
And on the Oglethorpe Street side, very, very interesting point that was made that, yes, if they glass this in, they could remove the staircase. In the way they want to do the storefront, is there going to be damage or removal of any potentially historic fabric?
No, well, technically, this is not a contributing building.
Correct. That's the question that we are wrestling with, because
right.
If we start eroding pieces of it,
right.
It becomes less and less.
I think I tried to articulate this the last time, that if this were a contributing building, we would be looking at it differently in terms of the proposed alterations. Under the current standards, because it is a non-contributing building, what they're proposing, we feel, the three of us, as a staff, are compatible. But your point is taken. One could make the argument that staircase is a character-defining feature of the 1973 design. Yes. The challenge is, as we discussed, I think, at last month's meeting, if they were to retain it and put a new storefront in front of it, then we would lose jurisdiction and the applicant could simply remove it the next day and we would have no review over it.
Which brings me to the, if the applicant puts the new storefront on the Oglethorpe Street side, is that reversible or does it structurally affect?
Oh, sorry. Yes. Yes. I did ask that of the project architect, and she will be working with us, you know, as they finalize their drawings, but she indicated that it would not cause any damage to the exterior of the building. That's what you're asking. Obviously the current exterior is that inset area where you will lose the staircase and the brick wall that it is part of. So I know that's a roundabout way of answering your question.
Are there any other questions for staff? Mr. Thompson.
Thank you for your presentation. My question is on the, is dumb, I guess, but if you remove that staircase, is there another staircase inside the building for fire escape
Yes.
purposes?
Yes.
Is there an elevator?
I don't believe there is an elevator, but I can't be sure of that. They're doing quite a bit of renovations to the interior. When I met with the applicant, they indicated they do not, there's no one who they have lined up to move into this building. These are just planned alterations to try to get it ready for a future tenant, but there's no one currently planned. It could be delivered as a bit of a box, I think.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Are there any other questions for staff? Thank you, Jonathan. Is the petitioner present today? Please come forward and state your name for the record.
Hi, Heather Spagner. I'm the architect with AD Collaborative. As Jonathan mentioned, we discussed this project last month, and we had a handful of comments that we met with Jonathan and staff and discussed the comments on each of the items and how to address them, and looking at this as being a non-contributing building but falling on that fine line of the 50-year mark. We understand. However, we are of the stance that it is currently and was when the client purchased the building, a non-contributing building. And to change the status would be a lengthy process that the city itself would need to address not only this building, but many other buildings that are coming about of this 50-year mark. With that said, we were willing to work with the board and staff on several of the other comments with regarding the freeze and retaining the wood rather than removing and repairing. So we are repairing as needed. We aren't fully aware of the extent of repair required yet. So that will be needed further study when we get into construction. But the intent going forward is to repair and replace any in kind. And then we are proposing to paint it black. And again, there were some questions with the canopy coming up. And as it was mentioned, when the owner purchased the building, their pieces of the canopy were falling and it became a damage and hazard to the public. So he did remove it. I was not part of the project at that time, so I'm not aware if there were any petitions or requests, COAs, to remove this canopy at that time. So that would be another discussion. What remains there is the steel frame of the canopy and the arched storefront entry. The owner has requested to replace the glazing and storefront to go back with a squared off to remove the arch. Again, this is the only arch on the building. I understand that with the pre-existing canopy over the door that relayed some information. However, there are no other design features in the building that correlate with this continuing or needing to stay. With the stairs and the storefront on the Oglethorpe Street side, we are aware that there was a comment based on the stair contribution to the design and it being a contributing element. However, we feel that adding the storefront would be a much more pleasant design, better feature for the future use of this building. And the stairs aren't necessarily going to be used anymore. There is no longer a second floor in this building. We do not currently have a tenant or tenants, so there's no proposed use or reason to have a second floor right now. To Mr. Thompson, your question about interior stairs and elevators, there is no longer a stair to a second floor, as there is no second floor. There is a remnant of CMU walls for possibly an elevator in there, but there is no elevator equipment or machine room remaining. The only stairs that remain in the building are these exterior stairs and a spiral staircase down to the basement level. We do feel that we have worked with the staff and the board on all elements addressing these and feel that we should be approved as is recommended by the staff. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions for the applicant?
Yes. On the going back to the Drayton Street side, and the removal of the original arched doorway and the doors, what's gained by going to a rectangle and, you know, removing that unity of the frieze, the canopy, and the doors?
So, again, the frieze wrapping the canopy is no longer there right now. So that would, again, we are proposing to replace it, just not with the arch. I am not sure of the hardware condition right now. So, again, we had originally proposed separate entrances for if there were the case of multiple tenants. We have now reverted back to a single double entry. So, again, this is just a case of if the actual existing storefront and doors are still functionable as they should be, or if any hardware needs to be replaced for egress and things like that, or design-wise.
So would the applicant be amenable to retaining those doors?
I would need to discuss with my client. Mm-hmm. Is your purpose to keep the arch? Is that what you're asking?
Yes, the arch and the physical doors themselves.
Okay.
Are there any other questions for the applicant? Thank you. Is there a member of the public that would like to comment?
I would like to ask this gentleman here, Mr. Jonathan, a question.
Could you please, sir, just for a clear record of the meeting, can you come up to the podium, use the microphone, and state your name for the record? Thank you.
Hi, I'm Johnny Rannitz, and I'm the next door neighbor. So my question to the gentleman right here is, I keep hearing 1973, and we've owned the structure next door, the Lackland McIntosh house, since 1959, my parents. You say 1973, that used to be a Goodyear store. I mean, is that when the improvement, was that when it was redone as a modern building? Because somewhere in there is a Goodyear tire store. And if you look at the back of the structure, you'll see where the garage doors used to be. Did that come up?
Thank you for your, yes. So in the staff report, I can send it to you. There's a history of what we found about the site and how it originally had been a gas station and then had kind of been swallowed by this new construction.
So there's something old.
There's still, we think, a little bit of a wall at the rear that is part of that original building. Had a bit of a tortured history.
Thank you, Jonathan. And just for our members of the public, we have some guidelines for the meeting so that we have a clear record. So if you come up to ask questions or comments, they have to be done from the podium, and you have a single opportunity to do that, and then we'll call on the next person. It's just to keep a clear record. But no, that's okay. It's my first day doing this too, so. Is there any other member of the public that would like to make a comment?
Excuse me. Your microphone is turned up.
Hello, Andrew Jones, chairman of the Oglethorpe Plan Coalition. I wanted to make a comment not specifically about the changes that are suggested, but about context, because we were talking about whether this building at some time might be contributing, might not be contributing. And what you haven't been presented yet is its context. And that's very important about whether or not it would ultimately be a contributing building. I have it's 104 East Oglethorpe. But the building next to it, as was just mentioned, is an important historic structure. And you can see that this building is just very out of place in scale, in a location, its odd setback from the street, the parking. And this particular building is known as Eppinger House or the Lackland McIntosh House. This is perhaps the oldest masonry structure in Savannah, if not one of the oldest, dating from 1776. It was a tavern. It was where patriots met. They eventually moved to Tondi's Tavern because this owner was a loyalist. After the Revolution, it became the home of General McIntosh, you know, who killed Button Gwinnett in the duel. So this is one of Savannah's most important buildings. And the problem with this 70s building, yes, it's coming of age, but it's really just an insult to this building. We would never approve a building like that being built today next to what is arguably one of Savannah's most important 18th century houses. And of course, it didn't always look that way. I mean, there was a period when the context of it was appropriate, when the building was appropriately framed by buildings that made sense. And one day, maybe we can get back to this. It would be a very good way to treat an important 18th century building. But if you decide that that 70s monstrosity is something that needs to be saved, then ultimately you're forever condemning the Lackland McIntosh House to being in a proper presentation in a proper format. So you're not making those decisions today, but there's a lot of discussion around this issue. And I wanted to make sure as this discussion develops that you're aware of the importance of the neighboring building. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Jones.
Again, this is Ellie Isaacs, Director of Preservation at Historic Savannah Foundation. Our ARC appreciated the changes that have been implemented since last month's meeting. Although we are also not in support of the current exterior staircase to be removed, as Jonathan mentioned, is a character-defining feature. We recognize that, unfortunately, once the new storefront is added, that the stair is out of your purview. ARC also had some pretty big concerns regarding the overall site plan and parking, which obviously we know is not in your purview, but we wanted to be on the record stating those concerns. That's all.
Thank you. Are there any other members of the public? Do we have anyone online? Oh.
Sorry. Hi, I'm Clara Fischel. I'm the leasing agent for the property. On the stairway, part of the, and the doors, I just wanted to speak briefly. So the doors on the Drayton Street side are, not conducive to a retail use, which is what the, property is being marketed for. We think that having solid doors is fine for an office or it was a church at one time, but, maintaining those doors for a retail or restaurant use is just not appropriate. Same with the stairway on the Oglethorpe side. The Oglethorpe side is obviously much, has the potential of being much nicer looking, by removing the stairway and putting in a new storefront there. And potentially even if, removing the parking in that location has been part of the discussion. So that's all.
Thank you. Would the petitioner like to respond to the public comment? Would you like to respond to the public comment? Okay. At this time, we will enter into board discussion and no further comment will be accepted. Mr. Becker, I'll start with you.
I have no comments.
Mr. Higgins.
I'm very torn about this one. We have very little guidance from the city as to how to deal with properties that are becoming of a historic age. And actually, if you would flip that back while I'm talking, now back over to Corbett's office.
Oh.
We have this corner where we have two very interesting 60s, 70s buildings. Not saying they're my favorites in the city, because they're not. But to erode parts of them makes them less chance of being historic. And when I see what's gone on in other places in the city, for example, the mid-century modern buildings that are being lost in the Victorian district, it concerns me. The loss of the doors on the Oglethorpe Street side that do mimic the canopy and the frieze, while being said that they aren't conducive to a retail use, there are lots of retail buildings that have solid doors. But losing this, losing the arch doorway that reflects the canopy, just pretty much says any historic fabric is gone in this building, so just let it go. And I would like to hear from the other board members their views on this, because how do we deal with these buildings that are not deemed contributing but are historic in according to the letter of the law?
Thank you, Mr. Hull.
Well, to have one response, I am also concerned about the loss of the arch at the entranceway. But more than that, there's been so much discussion here about things that, unfortunately, this board doesn't have any call over. For example, if they take out the stairs and there's no other way to get to the second floor, well, that's somebody else's problem, not ours. And we're looking at this house, not next door, not across the street, not in that parking lot back there. So I'm also concerned about this building. I really hope that when the motion is made, that the motion includes the requirement for the arch to be, to remain. I'm not quite as concerned about the doors, but that's for the rest of us. And still looking at that loss of the stairwell. Again, if you put up a window, then it's out of our purview, and it's kind of like the really nice house next door. It's out of our view.
Thank you, Ms. Rowan.
I agree with all of Mr. Jones' comments today. I think the building is hideous. If I owned it, I would tear it down. But they aren't trying to tear it down. They're trying to improve it. So anything that they can do to make this building better looking and pleasing to the eye, I'm in favor of.
Mr. Thompson.
Mr. Jones, this is your day, because I agree with your comments, and that's a reason why we should not have a building like this become contributing. It should be there till you can put something else there. And I recommend a demolition today. No, but I'm good with the improvements as they've been stated today. We need to move on. Make improvements to a bad building, or at least design-wise bad building, and hope for its future to be more productive.
We'll go around one more time. Mr. Becker.
Okay, to answer Mr. Higgins, get our view on this. I also agree that the retention of the Drayton Street entrance as it is would be the best alternative for this, and I do believe also my experience is you can get storefronts that will allow that to occur and to retain that and still be a commercial storefront and also continue to use the doors. around on Oglethorpe. I hate to see the staircases be removed. I understand the issue. Without getting into the interior details, I don't understand how the upstairs is not being used because it looks like there is a second floor right now. But I do think that those are a distinctive feature. So, but I understand the issue about they're not being used.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins.
I have no more comment at this time.
Mr. Hull.
Yes, I did have one comment that based on the conversations that we had here, if this structure is indeed a brick covered structure that was built many years ago, then if they ever do come back to us for a demolition or some other action, then we should be very careful, because if the skeleton or what's back behind that has some real import, we should really closely look at that. That's not the case today, but we should keep it in mind in the future.
From what I heard from the petitioner, there's no second story. I'm assuming the building is completely gutted. Yeah, so there's no need for the staircase. Okay.
Mr. Thompson.
Is that the case that there's some of that original gas station or whatever it was?
It's a little bit unclear. It looks like when you're on the lane that there might be a little bit, but staff has not been inside. I don't really know what's there. But again, just to be clear, we were applying the standards. This is a non-contributing building. There is a broader conversation that we all acknowledge needs to be happening. But we felt, to be fair to this applicant, we need to apply the standards that are applicable, in this case, to a non-contributing building. And we do feel that the applicant has made a good faith effort to respond to the direction that you all gave him at last month's meeting.
Okay, well, thank you. I have no other comments. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification on what we're here to review today. I'll now entertain a motion.
Rowan? I move that the Savannah Downtown Historic Review Board approve the petition 23006354 COA 144 Drayton Street, as requested, because the petition is in compliance with the visual compatibility criteria and design standards as set forth in the City of Savannah Zoning Ordinance.
Thompson, second.
All right, there is a motion on the floor to approve the petition as presented by Ms. Rowan, seconded by Mr. Thompson. Mr. Becker, how do you vote?
Nay.
Mr. Higgins?
Nay.
Mr. Hull? Nay. Ms. Rowan?
Aye.
Mr. Thompson?
Aye.
The motion fails 3-2. I will entertain a new motion.
Madam Chair, Mr. Hull, I move that the Savannah Downtown Historic Board of Review approve the petition. Hold on a second. 23006354 COA at 144 Drayton Street, provided the condition that the archway entrance is not it is retained, because otherwise the proposal is visually compatible and meets the standards.
Okay, there is a new motion on the floor to approve the petition with the added condition to preserve the arched entry and doors on the Is that the Drayton Street side? Is there a second?
Point of clarification. When you say the archway entrance is being retained, this one or yes. A new one put in?
No.
This one. Okay. Can we clarify that in the motion?
Sure.
The existing archway.
The clarification on the motion currently on the floor is that the applicant's petition be approved with the added condition that the existing archway on the Drayton Street facade be retained.
Archway or archway entrance?
Archway entrance.
Higgins, second.
Madam Chair, a question for the motion maker. So that means they want the door, retain the door and the arch, of course.
Just the arch, just the existing arch.
Okay. It's not the door, but the arch. Okay. Thank you.
We have a motion on the floor with a second from Higgins. Mr. Becker, how do you vote?
Aye.
Mr. Higgins.
Aye.
Mr. Houle.
Aye.
Ms. Rowan.
Aye.
Mr. Thompson.
Aye.
That motion carries.
Chair, just a clarification so staff knows.
Sure.
So we're looking at the photo that hopefully you all can see right now. So just so I understand you, Mr. Houle, you want the arch preserved, but they can replace the doors, right? The doors were not included in what you just voted. Okay, I just wanted to make sure I had it correctly. Thank you.
Madam Chair, tongue in cheek, does that conclude the, what's the word I'm looking for, the consent agenda?
No, unfortunately.
Oh.
We are moving on to petition of Array Design, Shauna Cusera, file number 24-000199, COA 548 Nickel Street.
Thank you. Bear with me for 1 second. So 548 Nickel Street. Lovely little modest building right here in gray. The applicant is proposing, I'm going to go through their submittal packet. Sorry. Some alterations to the rear of the one-story building. Go through here. So as you can see in the photographs before you, there is an existing deck that provides access to a pretty modestly scaled rear yard. The applicant is proposing to remove that deck. It's not historic, as you can probably tell. Excuse me here. I'm going to just jump ahead. So we greatly appreciate the applicant giving us, I think, what makes it so much easier where you have an existing and proposed on the same page. So you have on the top, on the upper left-hand side, the existing rear elevation, which is facing north, and the existing side of elevation, which is facing west. And then what they're proposing to do is add a screened-in porch, which we see, obviously, throughout Savannah. I'm sure many of you have screened-in porches. There's some minor changes here to the existing structure at the rear in terms of the roof line. Staff, just go back to my staff. Sorry, apologize for some of the technical things here, pulling some of these off. So staff met with the project architect. Project description, again, the main focus is creating this screen porch on the rear of the house, a removal of that wooden deck, which is not original. As well, I should have noted, we think it's a nice element of this proposed scope of work. The asphalt shingle roof is going to be replaced with a standing seam metal roof, which is really more appropriate. Again, here's the context. It's in the Beach Institute neighborhood. There's a church directly to the west. So there is quite a bit of a view there. In terms of the standards, it meets all the standards in our view. One issue that I know that came up during our pre-meeting was the proposed relocation of the HVAC unit to the roof. It was staff's opinion that that was all right and visually compatible. I know Mr. Higgins lives around the corner and knows it very well. Obviously, we couldn't tell. We didn't do a mock-up, so we can tell if we would see it. Our view was it would, if visible, because of the buildings on the side, would be minimally visible, but we understand. I'll let you articulate it better than I am doing right now. Our staff recommendation is recommending approval for the request for rear addition and alterations to property located at 548 Nickel Street because the work is visually compatible and meets the standards. And I'm going to go back just again. I'm sorry, this is lots of, bear with us. But in a nutshell, screen porch put on the back of a house. It's in keeping with the historic pattern of development that you would have seen for a modestly scaled building like this and with the greater downtown historic district. So any here for any questions you all may have.
Jonathan, just one quick one. Is there any financial hardship or space constraint that forced the condenser to be on the roof where it is visible from the street?
Not that I'm aware of.
Are there any additional questions for staff? Is the petitioner present? Would you please come forward and state your name for the record?
Good afternoon. My name is Shauna Casera. I'm the architect working on this project. Jonathan, thank you for running us through. There's just a couple of points that I want to make to you before answering your questions. One is this is a historic cottage that we believe was built around 1900. We have done a little bit of research into the Sanborn maps. And interestingly enough, when the street was laid out, there was a lane behind this property. That lane is no longer there. So I'd like to bring that to your attention that we do not have visibility from a rear right-of-way. The historic structure cottage was added onto, so there is a non-historic addition on it currently before my clients purchased it. And my intent is to continue that existing shed roof line to basically enclose the deck that's currently on the rear of the property. The one standard, as I worked with Jonathan through the project, the one standard that I'm respectfully asking you to work with me on is the slope of that shed roof. Going with a 212 pitch instead of the 112 that's there would mean that in order for the porch to work, I would need to bring that shed roof up onto the existing or the historic gable. And so in talking to Jonathan about that, we agreed that in order to stay below the cornice and the historic elements of the cottage, the 112 would be acceptable. But that is the one standard that when he brought to my attention that I did not revise. There are a couple other things that I did go back and change: the rake, the overhang, and the perpendicular soffit back to the porch. So I am here to answer any questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions for the applicant?
I'll just ask the same question I asked of Jonathan.
Yeah.
Is there any hardship or space constraint for putting the air conditioning condenser on the east side of the structure where it can be seen from the street?
There is a space constraint. This is a very narrow lot at 26 feet wide, and you can see the structure takes up most of that, leaving us with about 4 feet over here on the side. Currently, the AC unit sits right in here, and in order to not have it be 12 feet away from the house, we thought that putting it up onto the roof with the appropriate screening was a good solution to maintain access, or that's the one way that they get their garbage, you know, out to the street, and that's really the only access point from the backyard to the street. The visibility from the right-of-way is, in my opinion, questionable, given the proximity of the two-story building next door. Let me get back to this. See if I can zoom in. Nope, not within my skill set. So here's the two-story building next door, and I placed the AC unit towards that eastern side, hoping that it would be not visible from the right-of-way. Yep, there we go. Hey, yes. Thank you.
But why couldn't it be put in the rear yard?
It could. It would end up being 12 to 15 feet away from the house, which I think is something of a hardship. This is more efficient, and with limited impact on visibility, this is what I'm proposing.
Are there any other questions for the applicant? Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there a member of the public that would like to comment? Do we have anyone online? Okay. At this time, we will now enter into board discussion, and no further comment will be accepted. Mr. Thomas, I'll start with you.
I don't have any comments right now.
Ms. Rowan?
I don't have an issue with the condenser being on the roof if it's a small lot and it gives them more of a yard. I don't know.
Mr. Houle?
I tend to agree that the physical layout of the lot, it's not a parking lot, it's a lot, makes putting the air conditioning work on the roof as opposed to 12 to 15 feet away from the house, it seems like a better solution.
Mr. Higgins?
My objection is that staff has consistently over the years held that air conditioning condensers should be in the rear yard and not on the roofs unless there is a space constraint or a hardship. And space constraint means it would be right in back of the screen porch, which there is no space constraint. It is, you can see it from the street clearly. And it's consistency in staff views.
Mr. Becker?
I think to the fact that this is visible from the street, and every other time we've done this, we've been very conscious about shielding these things. And I think there is an opportunity to put this in the rear of the yard, and it's feasible. That's the way this should be approved and presented for approval.
Thank you. I'll go around one more time. Mr. Thompson.
Well, I think if the air conditioning unit is placed in a place of have limited visibility from the street. That is a better location for virtually everybody because of the noise. Mm-hmm. I can hear mine crank up in my mm-hmm. bedroom bathroom every night. So, which is right outside the window. So my thought is the proposal as recommended is good.
Ms. Rowan.
From what the petitioner showed us, I don't see how you can see the condenser from the street. So I think it's fine being on the roof.
Mr. Houle.
Nothing further.
Mr. Higgins.
Well, having stood there and walked by this house many times, yes, you'll be able to see it from the street. And it's just, as I said, following in compatibility with previous rulings by this body that air conditioning condensers go in the rear yards.
Mr. Becker.
No additional comments.
At this time, I will entertain a motion. And let me remind fellow board members to base your motion in something within our purview.
Higgins, with regard to file number 24-00199-COA, 548 Nickel Street, to approve the request for the rear addition and alteration to the property located at 548 Nickel Street. With one condition, that the air conditioning condenser be moved to the rear yard for reasons of visual compatibility. Otherwise, this meets the standards.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins. Is there a second?
Becker, second.
There's a motion on the floor to approve the petition with the additional requirement that the air conditioning condenser unit be moved to the rear yard to comply with visual compatibility standards. With a second, Mr. Thompson, how do you vote?
Aye.
Ms. Rowan? Nay. Mr. Houle? Mr. Higgins?
Aye.
Mr. Becker?
Aye.
The motion passes 3-2. Okay, now we are moving on to our regular agenda items. We'll start with item number 11, petitioner of J. Elder Studio, file number 23-006367, COA 103 West Taylor Street.
Good afternoon. Thank you. I know there was quite a bit of discussion of this in our pre-meeting, but just wanted to kind of review it for you all. So the building in question is 103 West Taylor Street. It's a grouping of four houses that front on West Taylor, obviously. The applicant is not proposing any alterations to the front elevation. Sorry, not great with this. So what we're here to discuss today is that this grouping of four, and interestingly enough, I think the rear of these was shown in a slide earlier related to the discussion of the house on Lincoln Street about details. But what we're here to discuss is these are through lots, so they have frontage on Taylor, and then at the rear, they front on West Wayne. And so what the applicant is proposing is removal of a portion of the masonry stucco wall and wood gate in order to install a new wood gate for vehicular access via new curb cut in the rear yard. This would include the demolition of a roughly 10-foot, 6-inch section of masonry fence and wood gate to create a double entry gate with proposed curb cut, as noted in the applicant's submittal. This was continued at your January 10th, 2024 meeting. You didn't actually hear it. The applicant requested it. So this is the first time that we're hearing this. As I noted, 103 West Taylor Street is part of a grouping of four houses that date from approximately 1871. They have a lot of Italianate style details. The rear wall, and I know the applicant is here and will go into this, we were unclear about when that rear wall dated from, whether it was historic or not. As you can see, we went out, as we always do, to the sites to make sure about the posting and also to review the site. Photos up, it was posted correctly. We thank the applicant for that. The upper left-hand picture is the frontage on West Taylor. And then on West Wayne, you can see where there's the sign right here. That's where they would be proposing to remove the gate and the wall, as I understand it, and put in gates to allow for vehicular access. As we all know, it is not within your purview to review curb cuts or landscaping, so that is not the focus or even any point of the discussion of our staff report. We are focusing purely on the standards that are applicable for this site. In particular, the Secretary of the Interior Standards, standard number two, historic character. The historic character of a property shall be retained and preserved. The removal of historic materials or alterations of features and spaces that characterize a property shall be avoided. I think I may have mentioned this before. The date of construction of the wall is unknown. The applicant has some information that it's not that old. I mean, it's been there for probably a few decades at least, but it's not likely a historic wall. So that concern is not paramount, shall we say. In addition, staff does acknowledge that the proposed replacement gate would be in keeping with the design and materiality of other gates that have been installed throughout the historic district. However, I would go again to the Secretary of the Interior Standards that states the removal of historic materials or alteration of features and spaces that characterize the property shall be avoided. And I don't know how much we want to go into it, but I did receive a letter via email from three neighbors who requested that their names not be used, in which they articulate kind of the same point that this is a grouping of four historic buildings and that this space, the rear gardens, is a character-defining feature. And it is staff's opinion that a garden in a siting like this, where you have frontage on two streets, is a character-defining feature. So we do not feel that the standard is met. Secondly, we applied the visual compatibility criteria. I'm just going to bear with me for a second. To maintain the special character of the Savannah Downtown Historic District. As proposed, staff does not feel the alteration is visually compatible, as it would result in the loss of an intact rear row of enclosed gardens and its replacement with a curb cut and parking area. As noted, though, we're not here to talk about the curb cut. We are not here to talk about the loss of vegetation, but there is this continuous row of masonry walls with gates, small gates, pedestrian gates. That is, in our opinion, character-defining feature and visually compatible. Changing that to a large entrance, we feel, is not. In addition, I know that we are not charged with precedent, but as we discussed during the pre-meeting, staff does have some concerns about precedent in that if this were allowed in this location, we're not saying that you should base your decision today on that. But we do have concerns that there would potentially, just in my quick surveying of buildings, there are literally, I counted over 100 where people could do this. And you would end up with a loss of, in our opinion, a great deal of historic character of the overall historic district. But again, we are basing our staff report on the Secretary of the Interior Standards and also the visual compatibility standards. We also go through all the other standards. We note that standards are met in terms of materiality, height, and all of that. So we acknowledge all of that. In terms of the recommendation, we're recommending that you all deny the request to demolish a section of the rear masonry wall and wood gate and installation of a double entry gate with curb cut for the property located at 103 West Taylor Street, finding that does not meet the Secretary of the Interior Standard 2 or the visual compatibility criteria for the Savannah Downtown Historic Overlay District. And I'm here to answer any questions. And I know we talked about it during the pre-meeting. We are having discussions with the City of Savannah to try to come up with a better process where applicants can go to them first, because we don't want to waste applicants' time if the city will not approve something like this. And then you're put in a position where you're weighing in on something where you don't have jurisdiction over the curb cut or the parking. But if the City of Savannah will never approve it, then it begs the question, why are we having this discussion?
Thank you for that. Are there any questions for staff? I'm impressed. Would the petitioner please come forward and state your name for the record?
Good afternoon. My name is Ryan Jarles. I'm representing the property owner for 103 West Taylor Street. I will begin with the wall here. He did mention it is non-historic. I'll also show you sandbar maps to talk about the wall as well. It is delaminating. The upper layer is coming off, and you can see the CMU block underneath. So to our belief, that would mean that it's a more modern wall. And then as we go into the sandbar maps, you'll see it does not appear as well. So I do want to show you some of the research we put into making the decision for even putting parking in the rear of this property in the first place, and submitting this petition. We did see it as a common occurrence, specifically on trust streets. You'll see it often on Wayne, Macon, McDonough, pretty much every single trust street throughout Savannah. But more specifically, when looking at our block and what's visually seen from our property, and so just on our short trust street, you'll see 5 curb cuts leading to either just open parking areas or garages built within what was once an open space behind the properties. We then wanted to make sure that we were obviously going to meet the ordinance, so we kind of took a look through. I'm sure you all know I used to present these projects a lot as staff, so I do understand the ordinance. So when looking at 7.8.10, parking and paving, parking areas are to be located at the rear. However, on trust lots or lots with double street frontage, they are exempt from this provision. And vehicular access shall be from lanes or north-south service streets. When a property does not front a lane or north-south service street, parking may be accessed from an east-west connecting street or trust street. So again, you'll see it often on all those trust streets I mentioned. The 20-foot width for curb cuts, we meet that. There's also a section 3.18.3 for exemptions. A certificate of appropriateness is not required for items not visible from the public right-of-way. So it was our understanding that if something is not visible from the public right-of-way, then it is outside of the purview of this entity. So we were a little taken aback and confused when staff consistently refers to the loss of our garden space, since it is not visible from the public right-of-way, but more specifically because the materiality of that garden space will remain unchanged and it will remain an open space. It will just now potentially have a car within it if this is approved. I do want to quickly, like I said, go through the sandbar maps, because you can see the sandbar maps do show walls, just not on our property. And you see that as we go down through, that our property, again, no walls visible, but there is a garage built. And within all the drawings, it shows it, for some reason, between our house and the neighboring property. And then that also can show you that there was most likely not a sidewalk here, as that garage led all the way to the street. So again, not a sidewalk. And this is the 1973 Pastons. So the wall most likely is from the late 70s or 80s. We're not exactly sure, and we haven't pinpointed a date on that. So I do want to move towards talking about the walls of continuity regarding that wall. Staff again states that for walls of continuity, we're not meeting that standard, and that the proposed entry gate, while on its own of a visually compatible design, material, and color, and we wish it would have ended there, would result in the disturbance of a continuous wall with gates that serves to help define the rear elevations of the row of four houses. So we're again confused by that statement because staff is calling our wall of continuity a wall, a solid wall with gates, and what we're proposing is a solid wall with gates. So that kind of threw us off a little bit. Moving on, I do want to show you images of that courtyard so you can see what it looks like. You can see a vehicle width section between these two larger column-style sections here. And then that vehicle-wide section, which is entirely paving material, leads to what to us looks like what could have been a garage door entry, which that opening does lead into a large storage area. So may have been a garage at some point. Again, we can't prove that for a fact, but it could have been that way. So when it comes to standard two of the Secretary of the Interior standards that staff brought up, which states, again, the historic character of a property shall be retained and preserved. The removal of historic materials or alterations of features and spaces that characterize a property shall be avoided. We already discussed the wall is most likely non-historic, and it will remain a solid wall with gates, as we learned is what the wall of continuity is. And the courtyard will remain an open courtyard, exactly as you see it currently, with pavers on the ground, and again, unchanged from its current condition, other than now a vehicle can sit within it, just like humans could. But all of that is outside of the public right-of-way. As you saw in the Sanborn maps, it was not historically an enclosed courtyard, most likely. It was just open, and at some point there was a garage in the rear. We wanted to then look at properties that have recently been approved for something similar so that we understood what this process was that we were about to go through. One of those properties was 127 West Gordon Street. It actually came before you all recently. It did have a curb cut and parking area within the courtyard on Gordon Street, which they then got approval for the removal of a city parking space, new curb cut, and parking within the rear courtyard, as you see here in this drawing. And then we also looked at 432 Abercorn, probably one of the most beautiful houses in Savannah that was recently rehabilitated. Again, parking was located on Gordon Street, a new curb cut, loss of city parking space, opening within the sidewall, and new garage built within the rear courtyard was approved. And this is probably one of the most praised projects in Savannah. So I just want to go over the fact that we did look around. We did a lot of research on figuring out if this would be appropriate or not. I know you all know I understand the Secretary of the Interior standards. It's been my life. So I will just end by stating that we're asking you all for a curb cut, one that's and a larger gate entry than we currently have within a non-historic wall. The only items from that are visible from the public right-of-way are those two items. And then the only items that staff believes that we're not meeting is the Secretary of the Interior Standard 2, which I believe personally to be untrue as no historic materials or spatial makeup of our courtyard, which staff refers to as the current condition, as a continuous wall with gates to serve to define the rear elevations. Our petition is showing that the wall will literally remain a continuous wall with gates. That is the petition before you. So I'm being honest when I tell you I didn't really understand why we were faced with a recommendation of denial. There is even an item that was just approved on the consent agenda that wasn't even shown, which was 521 East York Street, which was the entirety of the rear garden wall was removed to allow for parking within a rear courtyard. So we were a little confused about that as well. But before I yield my time, I did want to address a couple of staff statements within the recommendation in which they stated many times the proposed curb cut would result in the loss of landscaped area along West Wayne Street and on-street parking. Both of which staff did acknowledge were outside of the board's purview. There were several other things that were stated to be outside of your purview, but were addressed in the pre-meeting and during this meeting. And we just felt that that does create sort of an issue, and it can be somewhat inappropriate for staff to include these within the recommendation and throughout discussion, as this inclusion can create confusion, as well as leading to biased or opinionated decisions amongst board members. So we would just be weary of that moving forward. And when it comes to whether or not we're allowed to have the curb cut, again, that's outside of this board's discussion. We are willing to go through that fight when it comes to that when the time comes. So we wouldn't really want to discuss that at this moment. That's all I have. If you have any questions, I'm here.
Thank you. Are there any questions for the applicant? Thank you. Is there a member of the public that would like to comment?
Hello. Andrew Jones, Chair, Oglethorpe Plan Coalition. I fully support the staff's recommendation. I would also have a question for John. The staff decision is based upon the application of the Department of Interior standards to a rear facade and the application of visual compatibility to the rear facade. So if I were to say that neither the Department of Interior standards nor visual compatibility apply because it was the rear of the building, that would be a false statement. Correct. It would be a false statement. That was a statement that was made in the prior matter, 135 Lincoln. It's in the recording now and part of the record where the applicant stated that those standards don't apply to rear facades. Obviously, they do, and this is an example. And again, I fully support the staff recommendation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Please remember to state your name for the record.
Yes, ma'am. Ellie Isaacs, Director of Preservation at Historic Savannah Foundation. Our ARC is in full support of this project as it was presented. The proposed scope of work does not interrupt the line of continuity or change the current visual compatibility. Based on the history that was just given to you and the existing garage door location, this alteration and curb cut should be allowed in this location. Because as Mr. Jarles previously stated, once the car is in the garden, you won't see it. So literally the only thing that you can see that is being changed, that's being proposed, is the wall and the gate, which clearly meets the standards as it's currently there now. Again, I just want to reiterate something I also said earlier in relation to Lincoln Street. Not allowing the owners to utilize their building as it was currently designed is unjust. So that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any other member of the public that would like to speak on this matter? Would the petitioner like to respond to public comment? Okay. At this time, we will enter into board discussion and no further comment will be accepted. Mr. Becker, I'll start with you.
I want to thank everybody for giving this a lot of thought and even the members of the public, but I still tend to support the board's decision.
Mr. Higgins.
For the most part, I support staff's recommendation. However, I'm not comfortable with the position this board is being put in. There should be a decision about the curb cut prior to it coming to us. Because if there is no curb cut, if you cannot remove, it seems to me there's going to be a tree removed, and those decisions should be made first and then this brought to us. Because otherwise, we're making a decision on something that's not practically going to happen. If those things aren't going to happen, somebody wants to put a double gate in here. There are double gates directly across the street. I have less of an objection to that. I'll be interested to hear what the rest of the board has to say.
Thank you. Mr. Hull?
I agree I think in the city's partially at fault here is that we've got the cart before the horse. As fellow members said, I don't really have a problem with taking that wall down and hiding the car on that brick way, but it's got to get there first. And at least my understanding is that for this type of housing development, the city is not really crazy about it. I'm looking at a continuance until the other issues are resolved.
Thank you, Ms. Rowan.
Months and months ago, I walked this property, and where that opening is, there was a garage door there at one time. So there definitely was a curb cut and a car pulled into that garage. And the tree, I mean, I walk down the street all the time. The tree doesn't have to be removed for the curb cut or for the fencing to go in. So I don't see anything wrong with approving this other than the city's approval for the curb cut. So.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson.
Well, I agree with Mr. Higgins and Mr. Huell that first thing to get done is get the city to approve a curb cut and remove parking and whatever goes with that. And then I'm with the thought that having the wall widened or the opening widened and a new gate to access the nice courtyard is not a big problem. But just I think, though, they we should have that come before us after the city permits a future curb cut.
Before we go around for a second time, I have a question. Is Pam listening in? It's a procedural question.
Yes, she is.
Okay. What is the correct order of procedure as it currently states? Does the city require a COA to issue a curb cut, or does a curb cut have to come first for us to be able to issue a COA?
It really depends on the project. But you can't issue a COA for curb cut, so there has to be something from the city that says that the curb cut is okay with them. And has anything been submitted to the city for the curb cut?
Told to come. This is part of our discussions. Thank you, Pam.
Yep.
That we just had yesterday with the city, where I don't think there has been, to answer your question, Chair, I don't think there is a defined process to handle curb cuts.
Right.
And the city is trying to get their handle on what they see as a likely flood of requests for curb cuts in
sure.
the historic district.
So I think it's an issue, unfortunately, that we will not be able to, you know, get clarification on today. So we'll have to use the information that's in front of us as presented. But I do want it noted in the record that we have requested this clarification. And if that needs to come in the form of a letter from Pam requesting procedural clarity, I am happy to sign that on behalf of my fellow board members. But I think it's a point that will continue to come up, and I would like to understand moving forward how this issue is going to be handled.
Madam Chair,
we'll take care of
it. Would it be within our purview to ask for an opinion letter from the Streets Department about the city's current stance on curb cuts?
I don't think it would, because I think that it's a gray area, which is why I think that procedural point needs to be clarified. And I think that we are within our right to ask for that. I think when we ask for an opinion letter on issues such as parking, streets, curb cuts, that those items are not within our purview, I think that's when we start to get into muddy water.
Right. But if a curb cut is to be issued, we need to know from the city if that's something that's going to be part of the COA. But again, that has to come from them.
Okay, thank you. And I'll go back around a second time, Mr. Becker.
No additional comments.
Mr. Higgins.
I am leaning toward a continuance to see if the applicant can have discussions with the appropriate parties and report back, similarly to what was done on the Lincoln Street project where they met with the neighbors, just so we can have a better grasp as to where things are going, because again, this has just put us in a tenuous position at best.
Mr. Hull.
Look, I'm on the tennis court and I'm watching the ball go back and forth and back and forth. I had originally thought that a continuance might be a good idea, but then I'm thinking, you know, the things that we are supposed to be looking at, nobody's got an issue with. I don't think they do. So I'm leaning now that that we would approve the application, but slap the condition that, of course, the curb cut has to be approved by whoever's going to approve it. That way it's off our table and it's now back where it ought to be in with the city.
Thank you. Ms. Rowan?
I think that's the best way to handle this. And I feel like all of us are in agreement. That we approve it with the condition of the curb cut by the city. I think that's the best way to move forward.
Thank you. Mr. Thompson?
Sorry, I couldn't hear you and you turned away. I think I like that idea too. It's sort of like catch 22. If we act on it to allow it, then the city's in the position of, okay, am I going to deny this curb cut now or not? And if they conditionally approve it based on our decision, then we're put in the position of same thing, but in reverse. So, I can follow Mr. Who's comment. So, I mean, idea.
Thank you. At this time, I will entertain a motion.
Madam Chair, I move that the Savannah Downtown Historic Board of Review approve petition 2300 6367 COA 103 West Taylor Street, provided the condition that the appropriate city authority approve the curb cut.
Okay, the motion on the floor is to approve the petition with an added condition that the city approve a curb cut.
Rowan, second.
All right. Mr. Becker, I will start with you. How do you vote?
Nay.
Mr. Higgins?
Aye.
Mr. Houle?
Aye.
Ms. Rowan?
Aye.
Mr. Thompson?
Aye.
Motion passes 4-1.
Thank you very much. Just so I'm clear. So if they don't get the curb cut, no double gate. I'm paraphrasing. Right. Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Moving on to item number 12 on the regular agenda, petition of Ken Elwood, file number 24000212 COA 10 East Broad Street addition.
So the applicant is currently requesting an addition to the Hillier Building, also known as the Morris Center at 10 East Broad Street. Apparently I did not restart this. There you go. So the addition will be removing this tent. That's clearly not historic and clearly staff's okay with. So with that, I'm going to go into a little bit of a background on the property just so y'all know what's like. So the building is located on what used to be a manufactured gas site. The plant operated from 1850 to about 1953. H.H. Hillier and some investors purchased the property in 1945. At that point, the property underwent major renovation. Also, some neighboring properties were purchased, and about 33 buildings were rehabbed at that time as well. After the plant closed, the property underwent additional renovations to turn their existing buildings into shops, apartments, as well as business, local businesses. Again, the site underwent remediation work in the early 2000s. At this time, two buildings were relocated. One did collapse. The collapse of that building actually did cause some questions about whether or not the Hilliard building was stable or not. A possible condition assessment was done, but staff could not find it. Three buildings were also demoed, or parts of buildings were demoed. A portion of the Hilliard building did come down at that time. So the Hilliard building itself was constructed around 1881, though a survey suggests that this was possibly a previous building that was just reworked or altered at some point. There was a kind of its rear addition right here that was called the coal storage shed that came on after the building was constructed, and it was present by 1884 on the Sanborn maps. For the most part, the building did not go under major renovation when it was owned by the gas company. Under the Hilliards, it did undergo, again, major renovation. All of that is within the staff report. I'm not going to reiterate all that. But here are just some photos showing that. So we have a photo of during or prior to the renovation, after the renovation, and then at the time of the 1999 survey, which was done by TRC. Again, some photos of during after the renovation, as well as what it looked like at the time of the survey. And then here are some additional photos. These are of that coal storage shed that did come down again in the early 2000s. In 2007, the board approved extensive renovation work on the property. Again, what exactly was approved is in the staff report. But the upper photos are shown what looked like in 2007, lower photos are what looked like in 2009 after the work was completed. So again, the applicant is requesting approval to construct a one-story addition onto the property. This addition is flat-roofed. The main massing of this addition is pulled off the historic structure and will be tied to the main building through a connector piece. According to the applicant, the addition is freestanding from the main structure and will be tied in through expansion joints. The existing wall of the addition that will be tied into will not be demoed. It will not be touched in terms of major work, and it will be visible from what the applicant says from the interior of the building. The addition will, from the exterior, cover some of what may be defined as character-defining features. But again, there was a structure there historically that covered the same elements, so staff was not as much concerned about that as it may be with other projects. And finally, the applicant is proposing the use of hydraulic doors and slightly larger openings on this addition. Staff did find this to be appropriate in this case because of the property's industrial past. It was also one way to help differentiate the addition from the main building as well. So with that, staff recommends approval of the addition to the Hilliard building, also known as the Morris Center at 10 East Broad Street, with the following condition: because the work is otherwise basically compatible and meets the standards. And the condition is just provide lighting if that ends up being proposed for the project. Any questions?
I do. Kelly, I want to ask the same question I asked earlier, just so it's on record. My concern is with these doors of not being visibly compatible. When you look at the actual definition of visible compatibility and being visually related to the adjacent buildings, do these hydraulic doors, are they visibly related or visibly compatible?
So unfortunately, you do not see these type of openings on buildings either on site or in the immediate vicinity. So in that way, it might not be. But we're leaning on the more industrial feel of it and the property.
But from a definition standpoint, it's required to be compatible with what is there. And visible compatibility is a criteria for approval.
Yes, sir.
I have no other comments.
Are there any other questions for staff?
Yes.
Mr. Hull.
We mentioned this in the pre-meeting, but the attachment of the whatever the little structure is there in the middle, yes, that one there. You mentioned that it would be attached with something that would. I guess the question is, you're comfortable that the attachments here would not damage any of the historic brick?
From how the applicant explained it to me, they can go into further detail. The work would not impact the masonry. They may need to go into the mortar joints themselves, but the masonry will not be touched.
Go ahead.
Can you address the pass-throughs from the new addition to the original building?
I mean, those doors are existing.
Existing?
Yes, sir. That was part of the original 2007 approval. Any other questions?
Kelly, I have one question just relating to the visual compatibility. In your opinion, in studying this building, the surrounding buildings, and the history of the property, do you interpret visual compatibility to being same or comparable and complementary to the existing historic buildings, since this would be newly constructed?
I always believe it should be comparable. You don't always necessarily have to mimic 100% as long as it's generally compatible. And that's what I kind of saw with this. It's not 100% mimicking, but similar enough to know it's related, but it's different, if that makes sense.
Yes, thank you. I just wanted to understand what your opinion and what your recommendation was based on. Thank you. Are there any other questions for staff?
Yes. On page, my eyes aren't good. Page 10, we're showing the south facade. So can you explain where the pass-through doors are?
So they would be right here on my screen. Again, this photo was taken in 2007, probably the work took place. So those doors are now, I believe, wooden doors. And again, the applicant to go further detail, like what's there currently. Anything else?
Thank you. Are there any other questions for Kelly? Thank you.
The applicant here.
Would the petitioner please come forward and state your name for the record, please?
Greetings. My name is Ken Elwood. I'm the senior project designer at LS3P. This is a pretty simple project. I think one of the most important things is to state that the footprint we're using is a footprint that was there since, well, it was there until 2001 when that building was demolished. So we're not actually taking more land than was not a footprint prior to this. Also, this building, I think the way we're pulling it away, and we don't want it to emulate the existing building because we want it to take a back seat. We want it to be second in command because we want the existing building to be proud. And by putting this addition on, it helps keep the existing building that's already there come forward a little more and be a little more proud. Also, it's just, I think we can all agree it replaces a tent. So that there's that going for us. And the history of the site is, it's pretty tumultuous. I mean, it was originally the experimental gardens established by Oglethorpe, became an industrial, I won't say wasteland, but became toxic. The water was poisoned until finally it was cleaned up in 2000, the renovation in 2007 to the existing Hillary building. And now this really all contributing to bring this back to a celebratory space. You know, something Savannah can be proud of. That's kind of it in a nutshell. Any questions?
I have a question. Again, continuing with my concern about the modern nature of having these hydraulic auto care doors, essentially is what they are. There was a comment about whether those are visually compatible. I just think they're too far to be considered visually compatible. How do you have any ability to make these more visually compatible to the structures and objects in which they're visually related, which are those ones that are nearby?
One of the unique things about these doors, one, you don't see any hardware. All the hydraulics, all the lines, everything is completely hidden. So you don't see any mechanics. You never would know that it's a modern door in that sense. Two, because it is the way it's designed, we can do anything we want design-wise to the front of that. So it doesn't mean that it has to be 6 panes or 5 panes or 10 panes. What we're trying to do here is emulate something more as a carriage house door in this particular scheme that we're presenting to you. And to relate it a little more to the industrial background of that site, because this wasn't a residential neighborhood area. It was
It was a gas works, and so it was more industrial. And again, we don't want to emulate the arched windows in the existing building because we don't want to take away from that existing building. We want that existing building to still be proud, but this building also look like it does belong there, but it's not taking the front seat.
I'm sorry, I'm going to press again.
Okay.
Does this mean that you could make those doors more representative of the size and nature of the other door windows and doors on the adjacent properties?
Well, it's an event space that we want to be an open event space. So the doors are only there for security. We'll just say that. The majority of the time this will be used as an open event space where they are open. So it's an outside gathering space, but somehow we have to have security there. The one solution would be large wooden doors, which we don't want because we want to be able to keep the sun in there. We want it to keep it as light as possible. So size-wise, I think we really need to have that size. But within that door, we have the ability to design or change the proportions however we like. Does that make sense?
Unfortunately, yes. It didn't satisfy me. I'm sorry. Thank you.
Are there any other questions for the applicant?
Yes.
Mr. Higgins.
I don't mean to jump on the band, but you mentioned that you didn't want the transoms. I noticed that the new building is flat roof, whereas the existing building is pitched. But I'm just wondering if there's something else. You said you didn't want the transoms. It doesn't sound like there's much negotiation on the size of the doors, but if you went back, not to mirror, but to give some homage to the existing windows in some form or fashion.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to give you any ideas because they'd probably be bad, but to have something so that there is a little bit more of an homage to the older building.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe some thoughts about that.
Well,
not right now, but.
Yeah, we're trying to pick up all the lines of the existing building, the cornice and carrying through the soldier courses, and that's the homage. I mean, that's what we're trying to show, that we're paying tribute to that building. Again, I think the best way to, I mean, the divided lights, there are divided lights in the existing building, so we're using the divided lights. The best way to do it would be to add the arches, and I personally don't think putting arches on that building, I think it takes away from the existing building. And I really wanted to stress that the existing building should be the proud part of this project.
Thank you. Are there additional questions?
Mine is just a clarification. On the pass-through doors that go from the new addition into the historic building, which from staff are existing, not going to be any more modification of those?
They are existing and they will still be used, no modification at all.
Okay. Anything additional? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Is there a member of the public that would like to comment? State your name for the record and please keep your comments to 2 minutes or less.
Andrew Jones, Chair, Oglethorpe Plan Coalition. I agree that this original building is quite beautiful. I mean, that's stunning. That facade looks like an Italian Romanesque church with a rose window at the top. So my concern is that the new building is hiding it and therefore doesn't meet the Department of Interior standards, and would request some redesign so that the building would be separated more and perhaps you would travel between the buildings either open air through a covered passageway or something in glass so that we don't lose this fantastic facade. I mean, it's really quite beautiful. Those are my comments. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Jones.
Ellie Isaacs, Director of Preservation at Historic Savannah Foundation. First, we want to say that we appreciate the very thorough effort that staff put into the research of this project. Our ARC is in full support of this project as it's designed. Our only concern, also to echo what Mr. Jones stated, was the sight line of this facade, and we wondered if it could be explored that the connector that is in between this building and the addition be even more deep to allow that sight line to still be visible. We also would like to recommend that the connection that Kelly previously mentioned, that however it is attached, be within the mortar and not the brick to make sure that the brick is not damaged during this process. And also just to address Mr. Becker's comments about visual compatibility of the doors, those same types of doors are located on the rear additions of the Kehoe Ironworks building, which is visually related to this site, and you can directly see it from this building. And that's all we have.
Quick question. What do you mean by more deep?
Mortar. Oh, you mean more
connector.
Deep?
Connector.
So like this dimension being more deep to push the addition out further. Yeah, wider might be a better word. So then that way you can still see that facade. Because we had the same concerns actually as Mr. Jones about the fact that that facade is beautiful and we don't want to impair that sight line. Anything else? Okay.
Is there any other member of the public that would like to comment on this item? Would the petitioner like to respond to public comment?
Yes.
Just please restate your name for the record.
Ken Elwood. I understand those comments about the details, and I can assure you that was taken into great consideration when we did this. Number one, those details were always hidden when that building was there. No one ever saw those historically. It wasn't until 2001 when that building came down that everyone realized they were there. That building was put up almost immediately after the Hillary building was constructed. Two, we're not constructing anything onto that wall. So that secondary entrance, that connector, when you come in, you will still see those details on the inside. Those will still be visible and visual. So we are not losing those and we are not covering them up. And I don't think stretching the building out would really visually let you see anything more than you're going to see as it is. That's all.
Thank you. At this time, we will now enter into board discussion and no further comment will be accepted. Mr. Thompson, I'll start with you.
I meant to ask if Mr. Moore still owns, but I see in the report that there's a Ann Randolph Street kind of company involved in this.
Yes.
That, the ironworks and the, I don't know what you call the metal building next to it, and the Moore Center and some other things have been treated very well by Mr. Morris and his people that are working for him. So I like this layout and design. I think if the interior there comes up against that wall and you can see that wall from the inside, I think that's probably as good a display potential as you're going to get. So I like the design. I'm in favor of this. A staff recommendation was for, wasn't it? Go back to that. Okay, that's all. Thank you.
Ms. Rowan?
I agree with Mr. Thompson's sentiments.
Mr. Hull?
No comment.
Mr. Higgins?
No comment.
Mr. Becker?
Again, I'm going to continue to state that these industrial doors that are being placed up look too modern, and I think they're too large. And I'd like to also make a comment that the criteria for being visually related is the relationship between building structures, places, and view of the subject property. Greater weight is placed upon the adjacent historic buildings and structures. So while the Kehoe building may be located, it's certainly not adjacent. And if you look at that picture, you'll be able to see what this looks like. And it looks like it does not look like it is visually related to one another. And I think that there are some creative solutions for these doors that will still accomplish what I think is a good project, accomplish the business needs, but still look more attractive and accomplish the needs for being visually related.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Becker. I'll go around one more time, Mr. Thompson.
I think the area there is industrial history to it after the garden part of it, time frame. And I think these doors offer some potential for uses for the building that will be very attractive and get people there to enjoy the site as it's been and being restored.
Ms. Rowan?
The Ironworks building has the same doors, correct? Yeah, and this is an event space. So for the ease of having events there, I like the doors.
Mr. Hull?
Nothing more.
Mr. Higgins?
I appreciate the doors. I'm very familiar with them on the Kehoe Ironworks. I think this is maybe an opportunity for the petitioner to work with staff to gain a little bit more visual compatibility, because I do understand the concerns with fenestration. But since, as the applicant pointed out, basically these doors are a blank facade that can be altered, perhaps they can just work with staff on this issue.
Mr. Becker.
No more comments.
I'll add a comment to this one, because I think that we probably have a little bit of a philosophical difference amongst board members on the interpretation of the ordinance and what is compatible in relation. And so I respect the comments and the interpretation, but I do feel, again, that it does meet that standard, the way that I interpret it and given the adjacent structures. And with that, I will entertain a motion.
Rowan, I move the Downtown Historic Board of Review approve the petition. Sorry, give me one second. 24000212 COA 10 East Broad Street be approved, provided that the one condition is met by staff.
There's a motion on the floor to approve the petition as staff recommended with the one existing condition. Do I have a second?
Second.
A second by Mr. Hull. Mr. Thompson, how do you vote?
Aye.
Ms. Rowan?
Aye.
Mr. Hull?
Aye.
Mr. Higgins?
Aye.
Mr. Becker?
Nay.
Motion carries 4-1. All right, moving on to item number 13 on the regular agenda, the petition of J. Banks Design, file number 23-005890-COA, 3112 East Oglethorpe Avenue, additions, alterations, and fences.
All right, thank you. This is Caitlin Chamberlain presenting the petition for 312 East Oglethorpe Avenue. The applicant is requesting approval to reconstruct the non-historic front porch elements to reflect the design of the entry stairs and portico seen on the front elevation of the connected row home. To install an addition in the space of the non-historic rear porches on the rear elevation, and to install a new fence at the rear of the property to replace what's currently there. A little project history. This proposal was first heard at the December 13th meeting. Staff as well as HDBR members felt the project should be continued to address various visual compatibility and design standards. The conditions from that decision, as well as how they were met, will be addressed. But first, I just wanted to go through previous submittal just to kind of have a fresh in everybody's mind what was presented before. I think this one, at the past meeting, there were not too many issues with this front elevation, but it was the rear proposed addition mostly in question. So since that time, this has been addressed. I'll just go through the conditions that kind of goes along with that. Clarification is needed regarding whether the height of the addition will require removal of any historic brick, particularly with the varied existing roofline height not reflected in the drawings of the first one. This revised drawing now shows the detail and how it will not require removal of historic brick, nor affect the roofline that drops in height a little bit in that corner. Two is include existing elevation drawings for the rear elevation. That had not been in the original packet, so this is your existing elevations of both 310 next door and 312. The third condition was to provide product information with the stucco to be used to ensure that it was a true stucco, and that they have provided that it will be the Stowe brand traditional stucco. Fourth condition was provide information about how the addition would be installed to ensure that it can be completely reversed without affecting the historic material. Based on the drawings and floor plans, the addition will be installed in place of the non-historic porch, where it will not infiltrate the historic brick on either side. Here's just again a photo of this more modern porch. And then just back to the elevations. Another condition was to consider other color options. This original design was a dark blackish green color. It kind of went against the visual compatibility, also gave more of an industrial versus a residential look, so that they have now selected a lighter green color and then a lighter gray shade for the wood trim. So this is now the color palette that's being proposed. Six was provide product and material information regarding the window for the front elevation. So in this case, the plan is to relocate an existing window on the front facade that's currently not seen behind this concrete wall portion, take away this non-historic door, return this to a window, and in that process put a door back here. There is a window here though. So the plan is to take that window and put it over here, but the applicant has stated if it's not in a condition to do so, they will replace it. The staff does have a condition to confirm that information, and if replacement is required, to follow up with staff before that work begins. The next condition was to select an approved exterior wall material for the rear addition. The updated exterior wall material is smooth hardy board fiber cement siding, which is not only an improvement from the prohibited material of the fiber cement panels originally proposed, but is an allowable material for new construction and additions. Then to show on the drawings that the door on the addition will be inset at least 3 inches unless wood siding is selected for the exterior walls. So since it's fiber cement siding, they did show that is shown on here. And then to provide information about the material of the porch columns and portico on the front, which was not provided in the first submittal, but now it is noted on the drawings that this is a wood portico and wood columns. And then to provide information about the material of the rear egress stairs and show on the drawings that the railings will be 36 inches or less in height and that the spacing between the balusters does not exceed 4 inches on center, which is provided here. It'll be steel stairs. It'll just show 3 feet height, the 4 inches on center, and that will be painted Sherwin-Williams Tricorn black. The next condition was to revise the design to appear more subordinate to the historic structure and to read as residential rather than commercial. And just to kind of go back to this. So compared to this. Staff finds that the applicant has sufficiently revised the design of the addition to appear as residential rather than commercial. The change from the fiber cement panels to the siding, window revisions, lighter color, and positioning of the addition within the footprint of the existing two-story non-historic porch makes the design appear more subordinate to the historic house and has a more residential look, almost in the sense that they are enclosed porches. And 12 is to revise or reverse the window height to appear more visually compatible with the historic structure. So this is aligned more with not only the windows on the historic buildings, but also the more like the also non-historic infilled back wall on 310 and their porch compared to this window configuration originally proposed. So with all of that, to the staff recommendation. So staff recommends to approve the request for the rehabilitation of the front facade and the installation of an addition on the rear facade for the property located at 312 East Oglethorpe Avenue with the following condition: because the project otherwise is visually compatible and meets the standards, one, if the window on the front facade needs to be replaced rather than reused, contact staff to verify and review the proposed in-kind replacement prior to installation. Thank you. I'll be happy to take your questions.
Thank you, Caitlin. Are there any questions for staff?
Could you switch back to the south facade, the front facade?
Yes. Did you want to see the elevation or picture?
The elevation, I'm sorry. There we go.
There we go.
Now, my question, and you've looked at it, so maybe I'm not asking you the question, maybe I'm asking someone else the question, but the proposed elevation of 312 with the same railing, with the window shutters taken off, and with the door replaced, which is all a good thing, and with the banister looking exactly the same as the other building, does that not convey a false sense of history that the two buildings are exactly alike now?
We found that. I mean, that's definitely something that we did think about, but also thought that because this design on 310 was done through historic research and was thought to be enough thorough enough of a restoration that the Historic Savannah Foundation gave it a preservation award, that this would be not conjectural, but more accurate to what would have been here. Because what we see there now, the shutters are not original, and I think they're even like screwed in. I was welcomed to the property, so I got to see for myself this front stair configuration, and the platform up top is so crooked and just completely, I don't know if it was always that way, but it's certainly degraded to that. And it's, you know, there's a lot of things there that it just seems all of it was changed. And then I think we even saw some older photos where, yeah, neither of the porches were there, obviously, because 310 was restored too. So that was why we felt it wasn't conveying a false sense of history.
Are there any other questions for staff? Thank you, Caitlin. Would the petitioner please come forward and state your name for the record?
Can we both come?
You can both come. Just make sure you both speak your name for the record.
I'm Sarah Kowalski with Jay Banks. This is Josh Brooks.
Josh Brooks with Brooks Construction Group. Representing the owner.
We believe we met all comments and actually came to a obviously much better product in the end. I think we hit on all the marks, but if you have any questions, we're happy to answer.
Yeah, I'll also add that I want to thank staff for a really thorough and helpful review process. I think you can all agree we've come a lot further along than the first review. I would also add in the front elevation, true to Savannah form, we believe through extensive research and small selective demolition that these houses were in fact the same. But we've represented small details which you would normally see in Savannah's historic district, such as different glass on the doors, different garden level doors. Those were largely the differences between row houses when they were built. We think we've represented that there. So we actually think that this is more representative of what was actually there. Because we know for in fact, the existing staircase, landing, shutters were not original that are there now. They've all been replaced and we know those stairs aren't original. So we are simply just trying to recreate before the condominium complex goes up next door. The front facade of this. And then the second portion would be the rear exterior, removing the block portion, which was added, we think, in the late 80s sometime, to more conform to the parameters of the existing porch that are there. And I would also add that any synthetic material that's there is going to be milled to the exact specifications and depth to produce shadow lines, which would be representative of your cypress sidings you would see downtown. It's not going to be like traditional, like hardy plank siding. We wouldn't use that. So that's what's intended for back there to better represent. It is all painted. And the only reason that was selected is for sustainability. And then thirdly, I would just add that the owner has gone through great lengths to preserve what is left of the original interior for what that's worth. So, I think in preservation, efforts, it should be noted that the owner does desire to bring this from a multifamily unit back to a single family home. That's it for me.
Thank you. Are there any questions for our applicants? Great. Thank you, guys. At this point, we will enter into board discussion and no further. Oh, pardon? Public comment. Is there any member of the public that would like to speak on this matter? My apologies, Mr. Jones. I hate to rob you of your 3 minutes.
Andrew Jones, Chair, Oglethorpe Plan Coalition. I actually looked at both of these buildings in detail in 1992. They are an identical pair. At that time, they both had all of their original detail intact. This proposal for the rear is much better than the prior one. We still maintain that under the Department of Interior standards, which do apply to the rear of buildings, that having an open porch would be more appropriate. We prefer the condition at 310 with the open porch, but this is less objectionable than the prior application. And we also believe, again, that the visual compatibility standards specifically reference porches. That was in the 135 presentation. And again, John, you can confirm that there's nothing in the language of the ordinance that limits that to front facades. It's a rear facade consideration. So visual compatibility applies. And I would like to reiterate with respect to the other proposal at 135 Lincoln, you had an applicant who made material misrepresentations about the law.
Mr. Jones, can you reserve your comments to the petition in front of us?
I was not able to make those comments in the earlier portion because they were made subsequent to the closing of public comments. And for the record, I think you need to consider 135 Lincoln because the applicant made misrepresentations. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Is there another member of the public that would like to comment on this petition? Okay. Would the petitioner like to respond to public comments? Okay. Now at this time, we will enter into board discussion and no further public comment will be accepted. Mr. Thompson.
I got a private version of that last speech about the, we'll tell you where. I think this is a great project. I think it's the back or rear design is been improved in the color, I guess. I had to kind of imagine that color in the drawing, but I think this is a good project.
Ms. Rowan?
The design's beautiful.
Mr. Houle?
I like this project a lot.
Mr. Higgins?
I just want to thank staff for working with the applicant. It's so much more improved. It's great.
We agree.
Mr. Becker?
I would like to thank the applicant for addressing the matters that we said and taking them so seriously, both in the back and the front, and especially spending the resources and the thought process to try to make this more representative of what it was in the 1800s. So I really appreciate these kind of projects and excited when people have a preservation bent to their projects. I have no other concerns with this project and support it.
Thank you, Mr. Becker. One more time around, Mr. Thompson.
I have no further comments. Thanks.
Ms. Rowan?
No additional comments.
Well,
no comments.
Mr. Higgins?
No comment.
Mr. Becker? Great. At this point, I will entertain a motion.
Higgins? With regard to file number 23-005890 COA, 312 East Oglethorpe Avenue, I move the Savannah Historic District Board of Review approve the request for rehabilitation of the front facade and installation of an addition on the rear facade for the property located at 312 East Oglethorpe Avenue with one condition, because the project is otherwise visually compatible and meets the standards, and that condition is laid out in staff comments.
Rowan, second. Okay, there's a motion on the floor from Mr. Higgins to approve the petition with the one condition regarding the window on the front facade as outlined in the staff report. The motion is seconded by Ms. Rowan. Mr. Thompson, how do you vote?
Aye.
Ms. Rowan?
Aye.
Mr. Houle?
Aye.
Mr. Higgins?
Aye.
Mr. Becker?
Aye.
With that, the motion passes unanimously. Moving on to item number 14 on the regular agenda, petition of Homestead Architecture and Pete and Gretchen Calejas. I hope I did not butcher that. File number 24-000205-COA 545 East St. Julian Street alterations.
Good afternoon. Thank you. So this is another interesting site. The image, I think it's always helpful, for, at least for me, to start out with a street view. So we're talking about 545 and 547 East St. Julian Street. These were originally constructed as separate houses, but they were very sympathetically connected internally. So this is actually one property. If you go around corner, bear with me as I'm not very talented with this. It's a through lot, so kind of a little bit of that discussion we were having before, although not related to parking. You have these two rear dog legs, and or what I refer to as dog legs, rear additions. And then the gist of what's being proposed here is a second story porch that was here historically. I'm sorry, it's jumping around a bit, but I will go through the applicant is proposing, excuse me, a new second story porch along the rear elevation, as I just noted. There are two existing doors already there. One of those is going to be made operable to allow for the access to the new porch. Mechanical units will be relocated to the roof and screened from the public right of way. Five existing non-historic windows will be replaced, new windows to match existing historic windows. Additional modifications to the courtyard are proposed and screened by the existing fence. Here's some photos that we took when we were out there. You can see the view from the front of the house, the two houses, the house, what operates as one house now, and then from the rear. And the image on the upper right-hand corner, you can really see these two doors that are here. That used to have access to a porch that Not surprisingly, as you all know, when the historic district went through its ups and downs, often the porches, interestingly enough, were the first things to go. People didn't maintain them, they fell off, or they were moved, particularly on the back of the houses. So the porch that was here was ripped off at some undetermined period in the past. In terms of staff's review of the project, it meets all of the standards in terms of lot coverage and setbacks. In terms of the Secretary of the Interior standards for rehabilitation, overall, we think the project, the porch, we're very supportive of. But if you bear with me, I'm going to pull up there. And I would say, I talked about this during the pre-meeting, that I have had discussions with the applicant about the staff concerns. We are firm believers in, we don't ambush anybody. We give people a heads up about what we're going to say at these meetings, just so you guys know that. So again, I think it's interesting to see, here you have these two houses, but they are connected on the interior, but it's actually really nice. I haven't been inside, but as I understand it, they still have the two original staircases, which is really nice that somebody, when they connected them, didn't just rip it all out and get rid of all that historic fabric. But again, if we get to the rear, sorry, it's a little slow. So proposed rear elevation. So again, a second story porch with access through one of the existing doors. Evidence indicates that there had been a porch there with these two doors that lead to nowhere now. We feel that the proposed scale materiality is all compatible, visually compatible, will not result in the loss of any historic fabric. There were two areas that staff had some concern about, and as I said, the applicant will discuss this when they make their presentation. As part of the reworking of the interior spaces, they were proposing to take this center door and not get rid of the opening, but on the exterior, basically get rid of the door, get rid of the transom, because there's going to be, as I understand it, like a wet bar or something on the interior. We did not feel that was visually compatible, nor in keeping with the Secretary of the Interior standards. And so what staff is recommending, staff is recommending approval for the request for alterations to the rear elevation of the property located at 545 to 547 East St. Julian Street with the following conditions, because otherwise the work is visually compatible and meets the standards. Condition number one, study the proposed alterations to the center rear first floor door and transom in order to allow for the retention of the historic character from the exterior, including the option of retaining the existing door and transom in place. I believe the applicant, I'll let them speak for themselves, is agreeable to that condition. So on the interior, we don't have jurisdiction. If they want to have a counter right up behind the door and the door is no longer there on the interior in terms of the finishing, that's fine. But from the outside, it would still look the same. And the transom would still be there. And then we are fine with the proposed replacement of the five windows that do not look to be historic, original windows. We just would need some details on what exactly is being, it says replace them to match the other windows, but we need a little bit more detail, but that's something that we feel could be worked out with staff. So we're here for any questions you all may have before I turn it over to the applicant.
Yes, I asked this question in the earlier pre-meeting, and I wanted to confirm when we talked about attaching the proposed balcony to the wood siding and whether or not there would be damage to any historic materials.
Sorry. So I'll let the applicant describe how they propose to actually attach it, but it is something we've talked about them, and I know they'll work closely with us to make sure that there is no historic fabric loss. But again, I haven't been in the backyard. I've only observed it from the street. But given that there have been a series of alterations to the rears of what were two historically separate houses, with a removal of at least one porch, probably multiple porches at different times. The siding that's there is kind of a, as you often see in Savannah on the rear, a hodgepodge, right, of undetermined age. But we will work with the applicant closely on that. Thank you for that point.
Jonathan, easy question. Were they going to keep the transom, but possibly wall over it on the interior? Any idea what you would see through the transom? Simply because I know in other projects I've dealt with, they just literally put drywall over it and you're looking into the back of a drywall seam.
Yes. So no, it's a great question, Michael. So I'll let the applicant talk about this, but in looking at their floor plans, to me, the easiest solution is have drywall behind the door, but leave the transom open. It would let natural light into the space. It would preserve the view from the exterior. And I agree, it's not an ideal situation when you have, I worked on a project in a previous job where the solution they came up with was they actually put a curtain behind the transom and then there was drywall behind it. But we'll see if the applicant is amenable to just having the transom let the natural light in to the house, which personal opinion think would be nice.
Are there any additional questions for staff? Would the petitioner please come forward and state your name for the record?
Good afternoon. My name is Pete Callejas, Homestead Architecture. I'm here to answer any questions, but in response to some of the comments that were already made, I just spoke with the Ellises, and we decided that the best solution was to leave the transom and to modify the inside cabinetry so maybe the light would come through some open shells or something like that. That way we would preserve both the door and the transom as it is, or visibly from the outside, although the door itself will be covered up on the inside. Originally, we were going to keep the door and the transom, but we were going to put a blank panel in front. But because of the concerns and the recommendations from staff, we agreed that we would leave the door and the transom. And really, the only way to really treat that with the transom, like you said, would be to just leave it as a transom and allow the light to come through. And we'll just modify the interior design accordingly, which is fine. We don't have any problem with that. The siding, first of all, the house has been owned by the Ellises for 40 years. Many of the pieces of siding have rotted and replaced in kind over the years, time and time again. The additions on the side are non-historic, so that siding is not historic. There was a porch there one time. We know that from the Sanborn maps. We don't know exactly what it looked like, but we know there was something there before. So whatever was behind there, I mean, has been replaced with non-historic siding, or it may be historic because it's 50 years old, but not wasn't original to the house. But, you know, you have to secure the structure to the house somehow. But I don't know any other way to do it. It's just, it is what it is. But the siding on the sides are non-historic, and we'll do what we can to preserve, you know, every bit of historic siding that we can that's going to be visible. But I'm here to answer any questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions for the applicant? Thank you, sir. Are there any members of the public that would like to comment on this particular item? Okay, at this time, we will enter into board discussion and no further comment will be accepted. Mr. Becker, I'll start with you.
I just think this is a good project, and I'm in support of it. And I actually think that the use of the porch is an appropriate use for the recessed areas behind the two cable or cabinet ends.
Thank you. Mr. Higgins?
No comment.
Mr. Houle?
I think it's a good project and useful and an effective way to use the space.
Thank you, Ms. Rowan.
I'm in support of the project.
Mr. Thompson?
I think the project is good. They've been receptive to the comments, and I think it's going to look nice when they're done.
I'll go around one more time. Mr. Becker. Mr. Higgins.
No comment.
Mr. Huell.
Nothing further.
Ms. Rowan.
No additional comments.
Mr. Thompson. All right, I'll now entertain a motion.
I move that the Savannah downtown district.
Your mic is still not on. Thanks.
Turn it on. I move that the Savannah Downtown Historic Board of Review approve petition 24000205 COA at 545 East St. Julian, provided the conditions outlined in the staff recommendation are met.
Rowan, second. The motion on the floor is to approve the petition, provided the staff conditions are met. Motion was made by Mr. Huell and seconded by Mrs. Rowan. Mr. Becker, how do you vote?
Aye.
Mr. Higgins?
Aye.
Mr. Huell?
Aye.
Ms. Rowan?
Aye.
Mr. Thompson?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. All right, moving on to item number 15 on the regular agenda, petition of Patrick Shea, Gunn, Meyerhoff, and Shea Architects, file number 24000260COA, 602 East River Street, amend file number 17-002122COA, revise the site plan, first floor plan, roof plan, and architectural details.
Thank you, Chair. So we saved the easiest one for last, being sarcastic. So the site is 602 East River Street. The applicant is requesting approval for an amendment to a previous COA that you all approved, 17-002122-COA, for the construction of a hotel on the vacant parcel of land at 602 East River Street. I'm going to let Mr. Shea and his team walk you through all of this in detail. I think it's very important. This is a large project with a long, long history. And I'm glad actually that it is the last one on our agenda because we can spend quite a bit of time on it. In terms of the proposed scope of work, there are a number of proposed changes to the rooftop levels of the buildings. There are going to be some non-habitable restrooms. These will not have any roofs, and he'll go into further details on that. There have been some moving around of the programming on the roofs in terms of where the swimming pool is going to be located, the trellises, the shading materials, there are new ones that look kind of like trees. In addition, the main entrance has been changed. It was going to be an open area. It's now proposed to be a glazed entrance. In addition, there have been some changes to the courtyards. As we discussed during the pre-meeting, the access directly from the Riverwalk that had been shown in a previous iteration has been eliminated due to a request from the city of Savannah related to flooding and the seawall and all that. And I know Mr. Shea will go into that. In terms of the context of the surrounding area, I relied a lot on my staff report. I give credit to my predecessor, Leah, who wrote an excellent staff report. So a lot of this was taken from her staff report that some of you were on the board for. This entire area has been redeveloped. So there's the context is new construction. It's kind of wrapped around and protected from the rest of the historic district. You can see here the map. Where this star is where the project is located. Go down. Here's some historic maps that show what was there. It is now a vacant lot. I will not go through the entire project history. I'm sure you all read this earlier, but this goes all the way back to a 2012 master plan for the site that I know Mr. Shea is very familiar with. It then continued into 2013. I believe it first came to you all in 2017 for part one, came back in 2017 for a part one when it was not heard. Then it was again in 2017, later in that year, another time. In November 8th of 2017, HDBR approved with conditions the part one. And then in 2018, there was a 12-month extension approved. In October of 2019, the HDBR meeting, HDBR, I still have trouble with that, gave approval for the part one height and mass with a number of conditions. And then, as had been noted, due to delays caused by what everyone has been through in our country and the world over the last few years, and by the order of the city of Savannah, the COAs that were issued in 2020 were given a 6-month extension. So the extended expiration date for that project was April 2021. Then in April 21st, 2021, HDBR meeting, approval was given for the part two design details for this project. This approval was valid until April 21st, 2023, so almost a year ago now. So now the applicant is back seeking approval again for a number of changes. Staff has included in the report all of the proposed material samples, which I know Mr. Shea is going to walk you through. In terms of the standards, all the changes that are taking place, the building, he can articulate this better than I can. The buildings aren't any bigger than what you saw before. This is just a lot of changes. Again, that entrance, which was going to be more an open space, is now glazed. There are some design detail changes for the balconies. There are a lot of changes to the roof. And then there are the changes where you will not have these doors that were originally going to have access out to the Riverwalk. As such, staff is recommending approval for the request for an amendment to 17-002122-COA for new construction part two design details for a hotel for the vacant parcel of property located at 602 East River Street because the work is visually compatible and meets the standards. And I'm obviously here for any questions, but we might want to just turn it over to the project architect who, again, can deliberately walk you through all of the it's a very complex project and one that I obviously, being new, was not familiar with. Caitlin has been a big help in getting me up to speed on it. So however you, Chair, would like to handle things.
I would like to give the opportunity for questions for staff before we turn it over to the applicant.
I have a question. Jonathan, at what point do you say present us a new project in its entirety, as opposed to something that has gone on for 12 years with so many different iterations? I mean, for us to keep track of all these, I know I kind of want to see.
Yeah, no,
it's a new part two.
It's a great question. And I don't know if there, I don't believe there has been a set policy. And that's something we can have some internal discussions with. Where these projects that are kind of, when I worked in Washington, there were some, I'm not casting any aspersions on this project. I think it's visually very compatible, as we said, for recommending approval. We called them Frankenstein project. I worked on one in Georgetown that had been going on for 25 years. The board said, you know, some of the board members had been there almost for 25 years, but it is something we need to talk about. But given, staff's involvement, not myself, but Leah's, I think, very thorough and on point reviews in the past. I think we were comfortable if, and again, Mr. Shea is going to articulate all the changes. If we were talking about a great deal of changes, I think we would have approached this differently. But a lot of these are relatively minor. And given where this site is, some of the visual compatibility is a little bit different, but it's a very good point that I think we need to have some more internal discussions about and discussions with you all And I'd love to hear how you all feel about Mr. Higgins' question about, you know, projects that date back, you know, many years, probably before. I don't know how long each of you has been on this board.
Yeah, I echo Mr. Higgins' concerns. I think it presents a number of unique challenges when you have a project that comes back over such an extensive time period. I think we've seen in our own historic district what can change in a decade, particularly referencing threatened status versus non-threatened status and heightened awareness and learnings from previous decisions and hopefully course correction for any mistakes that have been made. So I think, you know, for me personally, I would like to discuss this further with staff and with any board members that would like to participate in that discussion, because I do think it puts a challenge and a burden on us as board members to be digging through past decisions that none of us were privy to the original meetings and presentations and the context in which they were given. So I would like to take that offline and request that a meeting be set up to discuss that criteria or the statute of limitation on some of these COAs. Is that satisfactory, Mr. Higgins? Okay. Mr. Thompson.
I was there for the beginning of this project until 2016. Started out with zoning so they could get more in two stories. The argument about where River Street was and wasn't. And Mr. Shea may remember that. My question really is this long history that started with a hotel and parking garage and demolition of a building and then built, you know, those other steps. But isn't this a different project within the larger site plan? I mean, this is not, how long has this part of it been under discussion?
Yeah, so this, let me pull up the, sorry.
And I don't disagree with what you're saying about having that discussion. I'm just trying to set the, Mr. Shea is raising his hand there, he may know.
Yes, so.
I can speak to this in my remarks.
Okay, yeah, all right.
So this is, the COA that was approved by you all, not, I don't mean in
the board.
Each of you.
Yeah.
So as you can see what's up, in 2021, so 3 years ago, this board gave, as I understand it, approved the part two to design details for this project that we're seeing, the same project. And that was good, valid until about a year ago.
Okay, that's my, that was
so
my
it, point. So this project, this project is recent. It's not from, well, the project itself did start, you know, 12 years ago, 13 years ago. What you're seeing today is just a tweak on what was approved just a few years ago, if that helps.
That does help. And I think hearing from the applicant to give us the context will be helpful. But I do think it's important for us to revisit this topic. 12 years seems a little extreme to me.
So my name is Patrick Shea, and I'm the senior principal of Gunmeyer Hoff Shea Architects, joined today by Anna Manso, who's the project architect for this project. Madam Chairman, you've done a great job of chairing the meeting. I think there are other chairmanships in your future. I hope there are. I'd like to ask to waive the 10-minute rule so that I could run through the history just real quickly. I don't want this to go any longer than you do, but I don't want to use all of our 10 minutes to talk about why it didn't start in 2012.
Agreeable to the board.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
So if we could get the site plan up, Anna, maybe you could help me do that while I talk. Which you over here? So in 2012, River Street East, the entire development, came before this board in an earlier version for the very first time. And that master plan was something that was debated for a couple of years before the master plan was approved. This hotel was one of four hotels and a parking garage that were part of that master plan. So that master plan actually was approved in 2013. The Homewood Suites was the first hotel to be built from that master plan. And that hotel was completed construction in 2017. It's the building that's there and fully complete today. The AC Hotel, the one that's under construction right now, was approved for the first time in 2018. It had to be brought back a couple of times. There were some very serious environmental challenges, actually alluded to by one of the earlier applicants. But it will be completed for construction this year in 2024, and as promised to this board, it will be a LEED Platinum project. It will be the very highest level of environmental responsibility. So it's going to take an environmental disaster area, quite literally, and turn it into a very, very high level of environmental excellence. The parking garage that is also part of the development was approved in 2018. It too will be completed in 2024. Now, the reason I bring that up is because until the parking garage is open, it's not possible to start construction on the other two hotels because there's a surface parking lot there that's used for the parking right now for the Homewood Suites. So all of these things are sequential. Hotel Ann, as it was called when we first brought it forward, was submitted for the very first time in 2017. And it was very controversial because it was proposed to be taller than two stories. The board said two stories, as defined in the ordinance at that time, was what we were limited to. So the height and mass was approved late in 2017. We got a 12-month extension to 2018. The revised height and mass was actually brought back in 2019. That was extended because of the COVID, as was presented to you earlier. But the part two approval was in 2021. So the thing that we're modifying and that we're bringing to you today has only been approved for 3 years. Now, also, what's not in the staff report, but it is very, very crucial to understand, is the utilities for all four hotels and the parking garage were commenced in a joint project between our client and the city of Savannah. So the utilities have already been installed for the Curio and Ann Hotel. And Leah Mihalik made a ruling that as long as construction remained active, then the COA remained active. So the COA has not expired, even though it was extended 2 years to a year ago. It's active. As long as there's construction activity down there, it's an active COA, and it can't be just taken back, regardless of how awkward that might seem. I also want to point out that the Hilton Hotel, which is the fourth hotel, that's over here, and the Plaza. This is kind of finicky, isn't it? All right, I'll take my word for it. It's in the upper right in what you're looking at. We're going to be bringing that back to you in about 2 months, again, for just tweaks. There are things that during the course of design, working with a world-class interior designer and with others that just want to change, make slight changes on the exterior, not changing the height and mass particularly or changing the spirit of the design whatsoever. And we'll also be bringing you the design for the plaza that is a private owned but public access plaza that will be between the two. So that won't, you'll be seeing that probably in April. I want to also point out that during the course of the due diligence work on this, it was required by the city of Savannah that a new seawall be installed 3 feet inland from the existing seawall of the existing riverwalk. Boring detail, but that cutoff wall is what will be the first thing that will be started on these two sites, probably sometime before the end of this year. And that was the cutoff wall that kept us from being able to do what we had hoped to do, which was have direct entrances from the riverwalk down to the lower level of Hotel Ann. That just proved to be impossible in order to be able to protect the city's a seawall. And then I've already alluded to it. Somebody said to her earlier, you know, the ground that was up the hill that was, you know, trustee's garden, and then it was the natural gas plant. That's like brutally contaminated. And our client has also had to work through during this period all of the concerns that are environmental to make sure that all of that environmental remediation took place. So it's not as if there hasn't been constant and forward momentum throughout this process. I realize that you can say that this inception goes back to 2012, but the truth is that this particular design that we're bringing forward to you today is much younger than that. Okay, timeline. All right, and now the more fun part of the presentation, Anna is gonna tell you about how much better she has made, with a little bit of help from her friends, the design that was approved 3 years ago.
Hello, my name is Anna Manso. I work with Pat Shea at GM Shea, and I am really excited to present to you this project. This is, I want to make sure that you understand the changes that we've done, as was mentioned previously, were basically in the rooftop layouts and in the courtyard layouts. This is something that's not necessarily affected, visible from the right of way, but it's important for us to kind of bring it back so you're all aware of what we're doing. The changes on the elevations are very minimal. We try to maintain the integrity of what was approved in 2021 by this board and just incorporated a few changes that are intended to improve the visibility, the look or the connectivity that we have in the area, and also the visible compatibility with the other buildings that have these surroundings. We've looked at, as I mentioned, connectivity and accessibility. We added a ramp on the east side of the building. I'm pointing it right here. It's going to be coming with the plaza design, but it's intended to also...
Can you move the mic closer?
Yes. Can you hear me better now? Okay. The ramp we've added, also thinking about accessibility and connectivity, we are trying to kind of take away... We're taking away the entrances to the from the riverside to the basement area, but we're trying to create that connection on the plaza area to try and just maintain that pedestrian activity that was initially intended. Some of the changes, as mentioned previously, minor changes that we're doing, I'm gonna go quickly to the elevation and see if we can do this faster. Yes. Okay. The areas that are kind of on the bottom side of the building, the materiality has changed a little bit, again, triggered by the changes for the cut-up wall that the city required. But as you can see, everything else that's not in yellow is basically exactly as it was submitted before. On the south side, the River Street side, we've made some minor changes to the railings and to the canopy, some metal screens, just again to protect a little bit more of what's behind it. And the entry on the south side has changed mainly for the space, not footprint. Footprint is remaining as it was, but the flat elevation, it basically doesn't change. You're seeing pretty much what used to be there. Same on this area here. If you see the flat elevation that was presented to you previously, the changes are basically not even visible. And then we did an addition of an elevator to provide better access to the basement of this building and connectivity to all the rooftops, and that's a change that is going to affect the west elevation. On top of that, the railing changes, I'm going to try and go quickly to, okay, here. The changes that we're doing to the rooftops are trying to, again, improve the guest experience, but we're trying to maintain, as you saw also in the elevations, the views from the river and from the streets, not changing basically at all. We've incorporated some elements that are intended to grow vines to create more natural look to the space in the pool area, and the rest of the trellises that were proposed are remaining as they were. And then the last change that we provide, want to show you all, is the railing changes that we did. One of the comments that we received in previous reviews were some of the panels, the flat panels that were in the railings were kind of not necessarily approved by everyone, and we just wanted to try and bring some of that comments back and just try and come up with a design that was more agreeable to the area also.
Okay. So there was a lot of discussion by earlier boards about the rooftops, and the decision was made that we would be allowed to have trellises and open roofs for guest experience up there, but that they would be limited to 11 feet above the deck so that they would be not particularly obtrusive. You wouldn't be able to see them at all from the Riverwalk. You might be able to see a little bit of it because there's a wide open expanse against across all of Morrell Park, but you know, very unobtrusive, and very unobtrusive also from River Street. We changed the layout and the design of what the trellises are, they're configured. But in the pool area, again, into the weeds here, but I'm going to go for it, so that the pool could be elevated above the deck. That meant the deck had to come up about 3 feet. And in order to have only 8 feet underneath it there, we came up with a creative idea to put trellises there that were made out of rebar and would be covered with vines. So even there, where the deck came up 3 feet, we have followed that 11-foot mandate that was promised earlier. There's nothing about anything that we're presenting to you today that violates any of the spirit of what was previously approved, and frankly is an enhancement. I mean, Anna's done some wonderful stuff with the ornamental metalwork and a lot of other details that I think are just a great big improvement. So with that, we'll take questions.
Questions for the applicant? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Is there a member of the public that would like to comment on this item?
Last time today, I promise. Ellie Isaacs again with Historic Savannah Foundation. Our ERC had a concern, particularly number 9, regarding the loss of the pedestrian access to the river via the metal gates that are now in place. If we recall correctly, because I was on the board during this time when this project came before us the first time, please correct me if I'm wrong. If I recall correctly, the pedestrian access was to the River Street or to the River Walk from River Street was a stipulation in the original approval of the project, and I'd appreciate confirmation. And that's all I have.
Thank you. Is there any other public comment? Would the petitioner like to respond?
There was one board member that's been there through the whole long journey. It's just that she's not on the board anymore.
So, we're thankful her memory.
Thank you for your memory. Yes, that is something that my client is not fond of, the idea of having pedestrian connectivity to be able to go there. The building is essentially one building underground. It's like a ship. And three buildings up above, so it reads from the street as three separate buildings. So the courtyards that go between are wonderful spaces, and the request earlier was that there be pedestrian connectivity so that people at certain times might be able to walk through the courtyards and get from River Street to the Riverwalk. And if that's a condition of approval, then we would make that happen.
Thank you.
Just for further clarification, we would appreciate that.
Mr. Shea, just to clarify that the city requirement that cut access for cut the access we were talking about does not eliminate the chance that there might be access some other way.
Correct. And the way that Ms. Isaacs has presented would be one of those ways. What we couldn't do was the basement is actually lower than the Riverwalk by about 6.5 feet. We had hoped that we would be able to have access from the Riverwalk down into the basement directly. That's not possible because of the cutoff wall, but it would be possible to go over the step over the cutoff wall and come up to the level of the courtyard. And that would be possible if that's your desire.
Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any further comment from the public? Nobody online. All right. At this point, we will enter into board discussion and no further comment will be accepted. Mr. Thompson, I will start with you.
Well, you just put a bar, outdoor bar on that cut through and you'll have lots of revenue in addition to people moving through it. The comment I would make is that when this came forward originally, I thought there's no way all that's going to get developed in that thing. And here we are about, 12 years later, and it's coming to play. So it creates a real competition, I think, with the West End, what's going on there. It should be interesting to see as time goes on what's going on. But I don't have any problem with the changes as long as staff is okay with them.
No comment.
Mr. Hull.
No comment.
Mr. Higgins.
I just want to thank Ellie for her clarification on one point. Thank you.
Mr. Becker.
I have no concerns.
I'll go back around one more time, Mr. Thompson. Ms. Rowan. I would like to just echo Ellie's comments that I think pedestrian connectivity, especially when you have a building that has that mass on one of our largest city assets with the Riverwalk and the investment that's being made down there to revitalize that part of town, I do think pedestrian access points are very important and should be incorporated into the design and hopefully added as a condition. Mr. Hull. Mr. Higgins?
Nothing further.
Mr. Becker? Okay. At this point, I will entertain a motion.
Madam Chair, I move that the Savannah Downtown Historic Board of Review approve the petition 24000260 COA at 602 East River Street with the condition that the applicant attempt to provide access from the hotel to the river.
To River Street, pedestrian access.
Pedestrian access, yes, excuse me.
From River Street to the Riverwalk.
Riverwalk, yeah.
Thank you. We got it.
Would you mind restating your motion for the record?
No, it's only 5 o'clock. Madam Chair, okay, blah, 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 with the condition that, oh God, how am I going to do this again? With the condition that the applicant, seek to provide pedestrian access from the Riverwalk to the proposed hotel.
Sure. We have a motion on the floor to approve the amendment with the added condition that the applicant explore providing pedestrian access from the Riverwalk to the property. Public. Access.
I'd like to have a suggestion. It should be access to River Street to the Riverwalk through the hotel.
Would you like to propose an amendment to the motion?
Yeah, I propose an amendment to the motion to clarify that.
Okay. To clarify, there is an amended motion on the floor that the applicant, application be approved with the condition that pedestrian access be provided from the Riverwalk to River Street. Do I have a second?
Higgins, second.
Thank you. Mr. Becker, how do you vote?
Aye.
Mr. Higgins?
Aye.
Mr. Houle?
Aye.
Ms. Rowan?
Aye.
Mr. Thompson?
Aye.
The motion is approved unanimously with condition.
Sure.
Thank you. All right, now bear with me. I got to read through a 100 of these things.
Yeah, and I, before you do so, I'd just like to thank Kelly and Caitlin, who have done the lion's share. As you can see, we've been doing, this isn't all of them, but we've been doing tons of reviews.
Yes, I appreciate that we don't have to go through them. I'm going to ask that maybe we explore next meeting if we can entertain a motion to combine these items and approve them into record as presented in the agenda. But for today, I will read them all. I will now read and acknowledge approval staff approved petition so that they are a matter of record. Item number 17, petition of Shaw Architecture, file number 24-000399 COA 13 East Broughton Street, amend 22-00-002-861 COA front opening. Item number 18, petition of Your Exterior Pros, file number 24-000153 COA 116 West Liberty Street, roof and stucco repair. Item number 19, petition of Fast Signs, file number 24-000043 COA 415 East Broughton Street, reface install sign cover. Petition number 20, Matthew Halley, file number 24-000393 COA 531 East Perry Street, window replacement and front facade. Item number 21, petition of Doug Bean Sign, file number 24-000151 COA 115 East River Street, reface existing sign. Item number 22, petition of CertaPro Painters, file number 23-000-6364 COA, 23-000-6364 COA, 523 Howard Street, paint and color change. Petition number 23 of Ethos Preservation, file number 24-000-40 COA, 410 East Gaston Street, roof replacement and window repairs. Item number 24, petition of Claire Blostell, file number 23-006372-COA, 340 Martin Luther King Boulevard Jr., window signs. Item number 25, petition of Trinity Methodist Church, file number 23-006353-COA, 127 West York Street, paint. Item number 26, petition of Ethos Preservation, file number 23-006347 COA, 112 West Taylor Street, amend file number 23-004867 COA, replace approved French doors with full length window, removed upper front porch balustrade. Item number 27, petition of Tim Kinsey, file number 23-006036 COA, 808 Drayton Street, selective window repair and replacement. Item number 28, petition of Your Exterior Pros, file number 23-006030 COA, 318 East Huntington Street, roof replacement. Item number 29, petition of Lynch Architects, 23-005836-COA, 132 East Broughton Street, amend file number 19001564-COA, remove previously approved window openings. Item number 30, petition of Home Depot, file number 23-006026-COA, 329 West Charlton Street, window replacement. Item number 31, petition of Your Exterior Pros, file number 23-006022-COA, 531 East Gaston Street, window replacement and maintenance.
Item number 32, petition of Rebecca Radston, file number 23-006018, COA 427 East Jones Lane, siding and trim paint. Item number 33, petition of Charleston Sign Company, file number 23-005869-COA, 500 West Charlton Street, two canopy sign installations. Item number 34, petition of Whipple Roofing, file number 23-005883-COA, 527 East Broughton Street, re-roof main structure and detached garage. Item number 35, petition of Ron Melander, file number 23-005571, COA, 517 Tatnall Street, window replacement. I think that
well
is
done.
It. Woo. Is there a motion to approve the
fantastic job.
Staff reviews? Or can I just ask for approval? Can I get a vote for acknowledgement? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Well done.
No nays. That's approved. Work performed without a permit and without a certificate of appropriateness. There is one.
Madam Chair, I'd like to ask a question about this one when it's time.
Sure. Now is the time.
Those are huge signs they have on their pumps there. Have you made any progress with Mr. Parker or his representatives on that? I didn't hear that one.
We've been meeting with them this week. We did get code enforcement was great. The city was great. I went out and took a look at it, and obviously it doesn't meet the standards. They just keep adding more and more signage. Soon the entire building will be covered in signs. So.
Can we just request that you keep us updated on
yes.
on progress on that item?
Yes.
Moving along to
one question for Jonathan. Did you have a chance to do a walk by on 222 East Gwinnett Street to
yes.
our friend?
Yes. So East Gwinnett Street is a gentleman who started repair work to the front porch. We've all been out there with staff multiple times. We've met with him on site. He originally described it as he was doing some in-kind repair work, which obviously is allowed. It's gone on and on. He added some almost look like bathroom handlebars that are kind of installed onto the side of the house. And then he added a secondary railing on top of the existing porch. So Caitlin has been great in taking the lead on this, but we had given him a little time to try to correct it, and we had made very clear about what he needed to do. It hasn't occurred, so we are going to be having the city get more involved.
Are we talking the same house? The
222. The 22, that was with the doors, I think.
Yes, oh, sorry, doors. Sorry. I'm yes. talking about the one west.
Different district.
No. I think it is east. It's next to the Kroger. East Gwinnett. You're talking about the doors here? Yes. We need to have some internal discussions about that one. I know there have been some issues. I was talking about, if you go down Gwinnett, there's a house, a lovely little, which you may have noticed, here. That has become an issue. This gentleman started repair work on the porch. It was starting to actually pull off the house. But again, he's added some he removed the entire the balustrade and everything. And we've been trying to work with him and be understanding, but we've reached a point now where we may need to take a little more forceful action. Not that we haven't been forceful, but we've been trying to work with him.
Okay, thank you. Notices, proclamations, and acknowledgments. There are two inspections completed by staff, the February report and stamp drawings, January and February report. Do I need to vote to approve those? Just move on, acknowledge them. In other business, since this was my first meeting as chair, thank you all for sticking with me. I will get better, I promise. But we
did a very good job.
I did convene a nominating committee to talk about vice chair since I moved from that over here. And so I would like to ask that nominating committee to present.
You can tell I checked out. I moved that up and I was done. Anyways, the nominating committee recommended that Melissa become the vice chair. And we'd like to make that offer, and then we could vote on it.
Absolutely. Melissa, is that agreeable to you?
I agree.
All those in favor of installing Melissa as vice chair, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none. Melissa, congratulations. You are now the vice chair. Is there any other business that we could possibly cover today?
And I appreciate all your comments related to that curb cut. It was a challenging one for us to review. But we are trying to work with the city on that, but also on signage, because you guys may be aware, the city has been citing people for signage inside stores in the downtown, illuminated signage. And we're trying to come up with some clarification on what without boring you with details, but many jurisdictions only have review authority over anything that's located within a certain distance of the glass. Washington, D.C., New York City, Philadelphia, Boston, 18 inches. Charleston, however, says they have it over anything. So there are some cities that our ordinance is not, in my opinion, terribly clear about that. So just to give you a heads up, there may be some changes coming on that, because basically what's been happening is city inspectors have been going around citing people and saying you have to get a COA from us, from you all, for this. And some of these, again, I'm just speaking from our internal discussions, some of these are small, like open signs that are like this big, but they're illuminated. Some of them are signs that have been there for one place I know, Pinky Masters from my past. Some of those signs have been there for 40 years. So now the owners of those properties are saying, why am I getting cited for a sign that I've had there for 40 years?
So is it staff's opinion that we need a clarification on our sign ordinance?
Yeah, so we're going to be, just to give you a heads up, we're going to be meeting with the city to discuss both their enforcement and also what their opinions are on signage. And then we'll probably be coming back with you with some proposed revisions. We just want to make it clear because to give you an example up near not in City Market, but across the square, there were some signs that were right on the window. And I explained to the owner, well, to me, those are window signs. You have them right on the window. But then he has another sign that's behind his bar, which is probably 40 feet from the window. And he was cited for that. And he's like, you can't have jurisdiction over a sign 40 feet from the window. And I said, well, the way the ordinance is written now, we may, but just we need clarification
sure.
on that for everyone.
And is that going to follow the typical process for clarification within the ordinance if there's an amendment made, like the relevant stakeholders? Because you know that in Savannah, there's like five groups that will.
Yes. Yes. We'll be following a very deliberative process.
Included. It sounds like it might just be a clarification of definition, but
right,
rather
exactly.
than.
Yes.
Okay.
But just to give you a heads up, because signage is becoming more and more of a problem.
Agree. Any other business? We are adjourned.